Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of The Rick Emerson Show is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
The following is a production of the Emerson News Network.
Here's a theory for you to disregard. Completely. Music. Yeah, true music. Not just rock and roll. It chooses you. You know, it lives in your car or alone, listening to your headphones with the vast scenic bridges and angelic choirs in your brain. You know, it's a place apart from the vast, benign lap of America. Did you know that the letter by the Box Tops was a minute and 58 seconds long? It means nothing. Nil. But it takes them less than 2 minutes to accomplish what Jethro Tull takes hours to not accomplish. You see, this is fatuous, pseudo-blubber, you know. I mean, which is fine, but voice it off as art, you know. Or The Doors, Jim Morrison, he's a drunken buffoon posing as a poet.
I like The Doors.
Give me the Guess Who. Come on, they got the courage to be drunken buffoons, which makes them poetic.
It's quite an honor to have the world's greatest rock critic
yes?
and editor of Cream Magazine back home in San Diego for a few days. Lester Bangs.
Live American Woman. Have you ever the most brilliant piece of gobbledygook ever? Give me some white light, white heat. Iggy Pop! Amen! I just put this on. This isn't on your playlist
Lester,
either.
I just think it's a little bit early for that.
Not for me.
Okay, well, that was Lester Bangs. This is Alice Wisdom, and here's Iggy Pop.
I must keep walking cheetah with a hat full of napalm. I'm a runaway son of the nuclear A-bomb. I'm the world's forgotten boy, the one who searches and destroys. Somebody gotta help me, please. Somebody gotta save my soul. Baby, that's late for me.
It is 29 minutes after the hour of one, and this the month of February in the year of our Lord, 2011. Thank you for coming by and making it part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk-packing district in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon, the home of all good things. Thank you for joining us. It is the Rick Emerson Cavalcade of Whimsy, a vast panoply of amusements, the likes of which the world has never before known. Thank you for joining us on this Friday. It is Friday, and welcome to Day 12. If you would like to be part of today's program, it's so easy that a child, or possibly you, can do it. It is 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964 is the telephone number. Your comments, questions, clarifications, ruminations, etc., etc., so on and so forth. Your brack, your brick, your tack, your tick, whatever it is you got, you might get on board with that. You can also email if you like. It is rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. Don Taylor can be reached at Dawn, D-A-W-N, at rickemerson.com. You can also go to the text box on the website. You can also message us via Skype if you like. Or you can just sit at home and think pleasant thoughts about us. Or maybe through the power of collective consciousness, my gout will ease. It's 503-505-6964. Here's the thing. I don't even really know what gout is. It's just a thing I reference because it's funny. Does it have something to do with bone shards?
I believe it's a buildup of some sort of acid in the joints.
Oh, well, that's less funny than I thought. I don't know what I thought gout was,
usually,
actually.
And it's usually in your big toe.
Really?
Yeah.
I actually kind of wish that I'd written down what I thought it was moments ago before I knew, because now I don't remember what it sort of appeared to me as in my head. I thought it was a thing in, like, your hip.
I don't know if you can get gout in your hip, but it's people usually get it in their toes.
You know where you don't want gout? Probably in your eye.
No.
Eye gout probably seems like a thing you don't want.
I don't even want to hear the words eye gout.
I'd love to go golfing today, but the eye gout's really flaring up, and to stay in a dimly lit room with a washcloth on my head for most of the afternoon. I'm sorry.
He won't leave the house anymore. He has eye gout.
Are you afraid of eye gout?
Don't look at me. I'm monstrous.
Do friends and loved ones draw back in horror at your approach? Now I'm turning into the Erotic Adventures of Zorro guy. Get rape. All right. I got to be careful where I just say the word rape. You know, sort of like a devoid of any context. All right. It's going to be one of those days. It's going to be all this then. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Thank you for joining us. It is Friday, February 4th, 2011. It's not really pronounced February, is it? Like, you don't really say the first R.
No.
Okay. Why is it there?
No.
Okay. Okay, here's what was great about that just now, is that usually you will do one of two things. When I ask you some retarded question like, why is there a second R in February, you'll handle that one of two ways. Either you will say, well, because, you'll say as though you were speaking to a slightly slow child, you will say, well, dumbass, the dumbass is sort of implied, but it's there like a carbon molecule. You'll say, well, dumbass, it's because of the Romans and the translation from Greek to the Latin, and which was then anglicized, and when it entered the English language, it became da-da-da-da-da-da. These are that, or you'll do what some people, Michael Bowden, would just, or, you know, whoever, would characterize it just making stuff up, but you'll make an educated guess. But
And sometimes I do just say, I don't know.
Yeah, but you'll have a very confident guess, but sometimes it's no more than just, you know, it's a hypothesis. Mm-hmm. It's no more than a postulation on your part. But just now, it was like it wasn't either of the above two, and it wasn't just saying, I don't know. You just sort of snorted contemptuously and, like, rolled an eye, a single eye, by the way, as though...
Like a mad horse.
Yeah, like, as though just asking the question was just so absurd on its face as to not even really be worthy of any real response, which was sort of great. So forth. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It is 503-505-6964. If you would like to be part of today's program, which, by the way, is brought to you by the fine folks at EH Vending, one of our many fine business partners. You can find out more about them by going to ehvending.com. And later in the day, we will have clue number 5. That is clue the 5th for this week in our Name That Snack contest. We haven't given the clue out yet, but once we do it, if you are the first person to successfully identify this week's snack via snack@rickemerson.com, that is the website, snack@rickemerson.com, you'll win yourself a fine heaping helping of consumables from EH Vending. That is later on today. Also, Monkey Watch coming up today. And some of this is yesterday's stuff that we didn't get through. Some of this is brand new stuff. Monkey Watch, Penis Watch, Corpse Watch, and the Penis Watch is brand new, correct?
Oh, indeed it is.
This isn't like a thing that we're holding over from yesterday's program.
It's new and horrible.
Ah, fantastic. Monkey Watch, Penis Watch, Corpse Watch coming up. Mr. Big Jim Willig will be in the studio with us as well, doing another installment of Humor Me Comedy 101 that's coming up today. He'll be looking at the life and legacy and work of Mr. Flip Wilson. So Penis Watch, Monkey Watch, Corpse Watch, Big Jim Willig, clue number 5 for Name That Snack. And don't forget, coming up next week, next week's a big week. First of all, next week we're going to be talking to Joelle Carter. She's from the FX program Justified. She plays Ava Crowder. And so I guess the show comes back next Wednesday, you said.
Uh-huh.
It actually returns to FX next Wednesday. Because that's another thing that I caught after the fact. I watched season one. I watched season one on your recommendation because it had gone off, it wrapped up a few months earlier. So now it is coming back next Wednesday. So on Tuesday, we'll be talking to Joelle Carter from Justified.
And this was one of those shows where I recommended it to you and you were like, oh, all right,
fine,
I guess.
Whatever.
And like you said, you watched the first one and went, you know, this is pretty good. And then you went, and by like the third episode, you were like, give me more.
I was really hooked by the thing because it just seems, and I say this again, really loving the show. It seems on the face of it, like I could hear myself describing it to Greg and Sarah the other day when we were on Fun Employment Radio. I guess it was Monday. I heard myself saying, well, he's a lawman who gets sent back to his hometown after a sort of a kerfuffle raises the hackles of the local political establishment. And in the hometown, of course, his, you know, best friend has grown up to be the town villain, and he's got to, you know, deal with his girl for whom he has unresolved feelings even though she's with someone else. And I heard myself saying this, and I thought, God damn, that sounds like every show I've ever seen on television. But the thing is, it's not. It's so much more than the sum of its parts, and it's so much better than that description makes it sound. And it's not even like it's just the acting or something that's raising it above the source material. The source material is, in fact, really, really good. It's just the description is a little bit misleading. It doesn't, you don't necessarily get how great it is. So, anyway.
You just all you need to know is that it stars Timothy Oliphant, great, handsome, charismatic, crazy-eyed Timothy Oliphant. And anytime anyone brings up his reason for being back in town, because everyone knows, like, didn't you shoot that guy in Florida? And he just looks at him and says, it was justified.
And he shot the guy. The great thing is he shoots the guy in the opening scene of the series. He shoots the guy in the middle of a crowded restaurant. And they build
up the
tension.
After giving him a chance.
And they build it up for like 2 minutes.
He flat out tells him, you can leave town or I'm going to kill you.
And I think he actually says, like, if you're still sitting here in 2 minutes, I'm going to kill you. And then you're just looking, and they do it in real time, and it's like, and even though you kind of know how it's going to end, they just, it's, you just feel yourself being ratcheted up and ratcheted up. Hey, speaking of being ratcheted up, I'll talk about going to see the premiere for Rage.
Oh, good.
Last night. So we'll talk about that real briefly. Let's see. Dawn Taylor's tracking the following headlines for you on this Friday.
A man is killed in a trash truck accident. Another man is rescued from a pit at a war museum. And a snake is found on a train.
Really? Snake on a train.
Missing snake found on a train.
Here's the thing. I kind of wish that Snakes on a Plane had been, and I know that we disagree about this, but I wish it had been more the movie that people expected it to be or had been more successful, because then we could have gotten the inevitable Snakes on a Plane in 3D, which would have been great.
I figured they'd just start doing not just Snakes on a Plane, but then Snakes on a Boat. You know, and snakes in an aircraft carrier, snakes in a helicopter. Well, okay, that would be a limited movie. But, you know, just different, like, more snakes. Samuel Jackson having to, like, you know, deal with snakes on many different kinds of transportation.
Snakes on the moon.
Yeah, snakes in space.
There you go. That's what I'm talking about. They ought to do, like, Die Hard on a plane full of snakes.
Yeah.
If somebody had a movie just called, it's like, if the title of the movie was actually just Die Hard on a Plane Full of Snakes or something, because that's how they pitched everything after Die Hard. Die Hard in a mall, Die Hard in a plane, Die Hard in a shopping center, Die Hard in a kielbasa stand. And if they just, I think, and it never came out for that weekend, thank a blessed and merciful Allah, but when Kevin Smith was talking about doing a Mallrats 2, he did the one great thing about Kevin, not the one great thing about Kevin Smith, but the one great thing about that, about the idea of a Mallrats 2 is he actually said that the title of it was going to be Mallrats 2 Die Hard in a Mall, which was great. I mean, that's the sort of thing, and that's like when he put out his Evening with Kevin Smith set and he did the second one, and it was you know, Evening with Kevin Smith 2, Evening Harder, which, I mean, that's the sort of thing that makes me love that guy. I just can't, you know. Oh, somebody says they did do Snakes on a Train. There is a Snakes on a Train movie. I watched it. It was painful. Well, they did Flight of the Living Dead, too, which I talked to Walker about, which, amazingly, not very good.
By the way, we need to coordinate this weekend and see if, separately in our lives, while we're away from each other this weekend, we can both watch Megapython and Octopoid or whatever it's called, so we can come back and watch it.
Now, is that, that's the new sci-fi or whatever, whatever they call it. That's the, what is that thing, the Octo Shark or what was that thing, the Sharktopus?
Sharktopus.
Because I missed Sharktopus.
Yeah. Yeah, this is Megapython versus Gatoroid, and this is the one that stars both Debbie Gibson and Tiffany together.
Is it airing for the first time?
No,
this
it was already on, and that's the thing is that I was going to try it and download it to watch it, and I was unable to find it. So now I'm going to seek this out. But it was...
Octopoid?
Megapython versus Gatoroid.
Gatoroid. Hey, did you see that?
By the way, it was directed by Mary Lambert, who you might remember as the director of American Psycho.
Okay, then. Well, it's good to see that she's made something of herself.
Unless I'm mistaken. Unless it's a different Mary Lambert.
Probably not. Did you see that the sci-fi actually has... they're airing some... It's a movie called Mega Piranha.
No.
I don't know if it's already aired or if it's going to air. Mega Piranha is the name of it. And I know this because I was looking around after our discussion with Chris Witherspoon and David Walker on Tuesday. I was trying to find the trailer for Piranha 2, The Spawning. And I couldn't. All I could find were trailers for Mega Piranha and Mega Piranha 2. So I guess maybe Mega Piranha has already aired if Mega Piranha 2 already exists. Or maybe they're going to air them back-to-back in some sort of... anyway. So, all right. And Gatoroid. I'll keep my eyes peeled for it. I'll see what I can do.
Mega Python versus Gatoroid.
Mega Python, Gatoroid. And do you know if... I can't believe I care about such things, and I really don't, but I got to ask anyway. Do you know if Debbie Gibson is playing the same character that she played in Mega Shark versus Giant Octopus
I'm
or whatever?
I'm fairly sure she's probably not.
No, she's not reprising her famous role as Dr. Whatever?
Probably not.
Okay. All right. Awesome. There you go. So forth. I don't even know what I was going to do here because I'm a little distracted by it. My morning routine has been thrown off a little. My morning rhythm has been thrown off. And I don't think I'm the only one, by the way. But my morning routine has been thrown off in a couple different ways. A, this is normally where I would be cracking open a crisp, delicious, refreshing Viso of the Vigor variety. And I can't right now because it's in the freezer. Because I can't drink it at anything less than... It's that thing where it's like you realize... Have you ever done this where you have the face-off between your addiction and your ritual?
Yes, the time.
And I think I've mentioned before that the last time I had some sort of Viso problem, it was when I was hunting around in the morning because I thought I had one left and I didn't, and I was like looking through my sock drawer and like looking in places, like looking in my pants pocket, like places it couldn't possibly be, thinking I thought I had a Viso left, you know, and I just sort of, and then I realized that I didn't. I'm like, well, I can't start the day without that, and so I end up going to the Plaid Pantry, and then it's like as caffeine withdrawn as I am, and as much as I'm like already into my caffeine withdrawal window at that point, which means I'm starting to get like the weird headache and the fogged up vision, and I can't really think straight, and probably shouldn't be driving a car, by the way, but I end up going all the way to the Plaid Pantry, get the Viso, but of course I can't just open it, you know, once I leave the store or in the car. I have to actually make it all the way home, and I have to get a glass, and I have to find ice, and I have to pour the ice into the glass, because, and I don't have to do this here necessarily, but at home, it has to be over ice. It's just, I am fundamentally incapable of drinking the Viso if it's not over ice, because that's part of the whole ritual. Not unlike the bending of the spoon. So it was the whole thing. And so today, I get here, and what do I always do? I get here, I take my Viso, I put it in the freezer or in the refrigerator so it's nice and cool and chilled, so like 1 o'clock I can have it. But I forgot to do that last hour because of something else that we'll get to in a second. And so I realized about 20 minutes ago it was just sitting here in the room where it was at like 85 degrees or something. So now it's in the freezer chilling, and I'm not going to be able to have it until like 2 o'clock. So I get this whole thing where I keep looking over at the space on the table where the Viso ought to be.
And that's another reason why we need ice here office. We should just get some ice cube trays.
I am going to be bringing some ice cube trays on this weekend or on Monday because I can no longer, because I was thinking about just getting a bag of ice, but it's like then you just have to replace it. And also you're paying for ice, which is retarded.
Yeah.
So I'm going to bring some ice cube trays because this is like the ninth time this has happened to me, and that's just not going to work. And so I was running late this morning anyway. It's one of those things where I wasn't running late as such. I was just late getting out of the house. You know, you've had those more. I think you've talked about that where you're up on time, but then it's like you just by the time you get out of the house, it's like you're already so, and it was, because you know, I have this whole thing about like I hate to leave the house. I hate to leave the house without shaving. You know, I got this whole... I guess maybe it is an OCD thing, but it's also just like, I just... if I leave the house, if I go out and I, you know, especially if I come to work and I haven't shaved, I just... There is nothing that will just make me feel like a loser more than leaving the house in the morning with, you know, just like a day's growth or something. I don't know why. And I'm not saying that, you know, that there's anything wrong with it or whatever. It's just
You feel unkempt.
That's the thing. But like way more so than like, I'll leave the house covered in food stains. Like, it doesn't matter, you know, I haven't brushed my hair or something. It's the shaving thing that really gets to me. So this morning I go and I grab the electric razor and I go to shave, and then I realize the electric razor has just been, it's been dead because it's like I just forgot to charge it. And the thing is, you're not supposed to shave by plugging the thing directly in and shaving while you have it plugged into the wall. Apparently that's kind of bad for it. You're not supposed to plug it into the wall. You're supposed to use that for charging only. You're not supposed to actually shave with it while it is plugged in. And I forget, it has something to do with the battery trying to fill and drain at the same time. And it's not right, as they say. It just does something bad. So then I'm just sitting there looking at the clock this morning, standing in my bathroom, staring at the razor while it's in the sort of like charging pedestal. looking at the clock, looking at the razor, looking at the clock, looking at the razor, while the razor's at the sort of charging level sort of creeps up very slowly and gradually, waiting for it to get to, like, you know, to where it says, like, you have reached minimum charging capacity, which means that you got, like, one shave in it.
Couldn't you have gone and done something else and then come back?
No, I'd already done everything. I was ready. I was ready to go, but it was like I was the last thing, just because I did my you know, I did things sort of out of order this morning, but the last thing I was going to do was to shave, and then I was going to, you know, get ready to leave the house. And so I had everything done. I was ready. I was locked and loaded, just ready to shave and then hit the door. And then I couldn't shave, and so then I couldn't leave. Anyway, so I'm just sitting there staring at the razor. And finally, I just ended up just grabbing the goddamn charging cable and the razor and just coming to work with it. So I don't know if you noticed when I came in this morning, I was like, and maybe I successfully distracted you because we're Bruce Agler's here, so we're having a discussion about something else. But I was sort of trying to do a little diversionary tactic, like Penn and Teller, like, look over there, it's smoke, it's fire. Oh, it's a handkerchief coming out of my pants. It's a snake. Trying to distract you from the fact that half my face this morning was shaved and half of it wasn't.
Huh.
Did you notice?
No.
Mission accomplished, Rick Emerson. So just now I ducked into the bathroom and actually finished the rest of the shave job. So during Legion of News, if you looked over here, my razor was actually charging.
Oh, what do you know?
I couldn't, I had to leave the house and it just killed me to do it, but I could not go through the day either not shaved or even worse, partially shaved.
Yeah.
Because then it looks like you just fell off your bike at some point and half your face won't grow hair.
Yeah.
Then you look like one of those guys tries to grow a beard or like Patrick and he's just got the patchiness where it won't come in. Anyway, so I finally got my shave, but as a result of that, I was all distracted. The Vizo didn't go to the freezer, and I don't have the Vizo, and it's a whole thing. All right, that was my morning.
Mm.
Anyway, how are you, Dawn? Other than having to plunge the toilet just now, and thank you for doing that, by the way.
Oh, not a problem. Yeah.
Dawn broke the toilet, apparently.
I did not, actually. It was not me, because... Okay, not to get into too much detail about bathroom habits and stuff, but I am...
Tell me about your urine, Dawn.
Well, it's not really the urine. It's the other thing. And I have this issue about, like, I won't do that unless I absolutely have to.
Unless you're at home.
Unless I'm at home.
Yeah.
Because I just, you know, because I don't want anyone to know I have bodily functions. I don't know. But I just, I am one of those people that is neurotic about that.
Yeah.
The problem being, though, that other people, people we work with, people in the building, other people use the bathroom here, and they do not have such compunctions. And this is a really... I love this office building. I really do. But this is not a great toilet plumbing system.
You know,
it has backed up a number of times since we've been here.
The problem with this bathroom, and again, and I second it, I love this building. I love being here. And I'm not just saying this. It's really, really. In fact, I was when our pal Siegfried was here, he was actually going, he goes, you guys have got a really sweet setup here. And I was actually noting, I went on, because he'd never seen the rooftop patio, which, and people think we're effing with him when we say that sometimes.
Yeah.
That I'm sort of, you know, like I'm at Palatial Emerson Manor or whatever. But there really is a rooftop patio. And this is a fantastic studio we're in, and I really could not be happier with this place. It's not that the bathroom is bad. I was thinking about this the other day. It's not that the bathroom is bad. It's that basically we are in an office building, you know, essentially, even though there's not a whole lot of people here. There's an office building, but it's a residential bathroom. That's the thing with a residential toilet and the concomitant small pipe that comes with that. So that's the problem.
I think that this is the third or fourth time since we've been here that I personally have plunged to this toilet.
Because people treat it like it's a toilet, like one of those like turbo flush, like things that you've got like at a regular business place.
Yeah.
And it's not. You got to treat it like you got to treat the thing at home where you can't just be piling stuff. Like, you know what you can't do that? You can't. Because like when we were first here, I was like, because the sink and the toilet are on opposite side of the bathroom. So if you're facing the sink, the toilet is behind you. And I actually was just like washing my face or something, and I wadded up some paper towels and turned and, you know, without thinking about it, balled them up into the toilet, hit the flush thing, you know, whatever. Just because, I don't know, I think it's because I actually at that point did not know where the wastebasket was. And I found out later that it was sort of underneath the sink and the whatever, but I don't think I actually knew that. And so I thought, no, wastebasket, into the toilet, hit the flush, and then it did, in fact, clog up. So I learned, like, right out of the gate, you can't be putting paper towels in there because that'll just completely screw it up. But you get used to a toilet at your office, that's the reason I want to be rich, because I want to have one of those put in my home, where it's just the huge industrial toilet that'll just suck everything down the drain. Doesn't matter, you can put a bowling ball in there, and it'll just take the thing away. So this morning... So you went in and you used the bathroom for the first purpose, not the second.
Right.
And then
nothing happened. So then I did that idiot thing that people do where I flushed it again. And then just watched the water rise even further and then flow onto the floor. It's like, oh,
God. Now you didn't, did you not, Well, I don't know how it is.
And then I reached in and grabbed the ball thing so it would stop filling. And you know.
Now, see, now, I don't know. I was going to ask, I don't know how it works with you and your bum leg over there, but you got the because, you know, you can turn that handle in the back. And just stop it from filling.
I didn't even think about
that. That's a thing that everybody has learned. If you've ever lived in a cheap-ass apartment, you learn to you get down on your knees and, oh, God, you turn the dial, and you do that until the thing is plunging.
Yeah, so you ran downstairs, you got the plunger, came back up. I grabbed a roll of paper towels, I blotted up the floor, and then I plunged the toilet. Now everything's fine.
The worst part about that is, and I can totally see it on your face when you come in, it's that look of like, so the toilet overflowed. So if you go get the plunger, I'll plunge it. Which, and I appreciate you doing that, by the way. But because that is, you know, because that's one of those things where, for good and bad, if you're the one using the toilet when it overflows, like, it's on you to plunge it. Mm-hmm. And that's what sucks, because a lot of times it's you're not the one, and as you clearly weren't here, because you're a responsible adult. You know how to.
I know how to use a toilet.
You can pee without incident most of the time.
And again, I don't. I try at all times to avoid doing that other activity.
That unnamed activity.
So I didn't clog it up. It wasn't me.
Well.
So.
All right. Now, I apologize to everyone for this. Now, having plunged the toilet, do you think that was the cause? Was
I don't it know. It could have been that. It could have just been, again, it could have
there
been
was no,
a giant wad of paper, of toilet paper.
So there was
or
no indication as to what clogged it, like no material or whatever.
No, it wasn't anything. It wasn't grotesque.
I am guessing paper towels, because it's just that's the thing where it's like, I think that is probably what gets tossed into toilets everywhere. But again, most places it'll sort of suck them away. And you never do that at home, which is why it never occurs to you. Like at home, you're not throwing paper towels in the toilet for whatever reason. So it never occurs to you. But in a public bathroom.
See, I have never thrown a paper towel into a public bathroom, but then I don't know why I would. But you do have those seat cover things, and you stick those down in the public bathrooms.
Well, you want to talk about a waste. You want to talk about a waste of trees. Why aren't environmentalists bitching about those, about toilet seat covers?
No, because those don't protect you from anything.
No, because you know what? They're paper. And you know what paper does when it turns to liquid? It just turns to pointless sludge that is completely porous.
I'm not sure what people think they're going to catch from sitting on a toilet seat. I mean, I lived in a house full of musicians when I was in my 20s, and all of our musician friends and people who come over for parties, and we all used one bathroom. And believe me, if I didn't catch any kind of weird butt disease from that, I'm not going to catch it from one time sitting on, you know, the toilet at, like, the Regal Cinemas using a paper cover.
And also because, A, the paper cover protects you from nothing because, again, it's paper, and paper is porous. That's why you can flush it. Mm-hmm. You can flush it because it's just made of the same thing toilet paper is made of. And it's a water and liquid and whatever goes through it immediately. Also, here's a little secret for me to you, kids. Unless your buttocks are just covered with, like, open sores, you know, your skin kind of, you know, is sort of a barrier for that stuff. It's not like the paper isn't really going to do anything. Your skin wasn't already going to do. Well, in any of it.
Anyway, so that was the thing. And you went downstairs for me. I don't go into too much detail about this, but I got you to go downstairs because I hurt my foot. And I went to the doctor last night after work.
You did seem to be limping a little bit more than normal.
Yeah, I pulled something in my foot and it was hurting really, really bad last week. And I started getting worried about it because over the course of like 4 or 5 days, it's been hurting all week and it's been moving. And that's what really bothered me is it started out on the bottom of my foot, like right by my big toe on the pad of my foot. Yeah. And it was under the front pad part of my foot. Then it moved up to the side of the side of the bottom of my foot, the outside. And then as of yesterday, it had moved up and was like underneath my ankle. And I thought, well, this is weird. Why would the pain be moving from one place to another? That's not right. So I went to the doctor and they x-rayed me and then they just said, I've got tendonitis. There's apparently this one long tendon called, and I wrote this down because I love this name because it sounds like a spell in Harry Potter, the Peronius Longus. And it goes down like from like the outside of like your knee all the way down the outside of your calf and then goes under your foot. It goes like past your ankle and under your foot and ends it anchors like on the bottom of your foot by your big toe.
Does it anchor by the intercontinental buttocks?
But yeah, so apparently I have tendonitis in this particular tendon. And then just, I've been walking.
Now, what do they have to do for that? Do they have to take it out?
Nothing. No. They don't. Well, I mean, if it continued to go on, they might, like, you know, go, ooh, you need surgery. So, but the thing is, usually what they do with tendonitis is they just go, don't walk around on it so
right.
much.
Try not to use it very much.
You know, ice it down and take some ibuprofen and don't walk around so much. So, but the other day, not yesterday, but the day before, I went downstairs and it was like the bottom of my foot and it hurt so bad that by the time I got downstairs, because, you know, you kind of got to like step down onto your foot when you're going downstairs.
You can't just be hop along all the way to the car.
And you're putting all of your weight on it and et cetera. And then gravity, of course, plus some. So by the time I got down to the bottom of the stairs, it just hurt so bad that I was just this sad, pathetic, hobbly person.
And this was here?
This was here.
Is this why you made that big stumbling noise? And you went, I'm
yes.
okay, it's fine, don't come down, I'm all right.
Yeah, I went to put my laptop bag down like two steps further so I wasn't carrying it because I didn't want to have any more weight
right.
because it hurt so bad. And the laptop bag went tumble, 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 tumble down the stairs.
And I was sitting up here and I heard this crash and then you going, no, it's okay.
Yeah, I said, that wasn't me falling down the stairs, so don't worry about it, because I thought you might think that's what it
was. I thought, okay, but see, paradoxically, I thought it was you falling down the stairs
well,
and you were being wacky about it.
Oh, no, I was telling you don't come rushing to my aid because
okay.
I didn't
all
fall
right.
down the stairs.
Okay.
So I got downstairs and I realized that my car was like a block away. And I could only take about three steps without it hurting just horribly. So I was like, take a few steps, then take some steps. And Sarah and Greg were outside smoking cigarettes. And Sarah goes, and they asked what was going on. I said, I really hurt my foot. And I'm just, and Sarah goes, do you want me to go get your car for you? And I thought about it for a moment. I had pride for about a half a second. And then I just went, yes.
Yes, please.
Yes, I do.
Thank you.
I just stood there while Sarah ran down to the end of the block and drove my car up for me like a valet. So that I could drive home.
Now, do you know what it is? See, here the thing is, now you know what it'll be like when you're old.
I mean,
it's a little bit of a...
This is it, Rick. This is it.
You've arrived?
I've arrived. This is it. You know,
well, how do you like it? People waiting on you and so forth?
I need a robotic exoskeleton
What's
to just carry my head around.
What's the view from your age, Dawn? What does
Jesus
it look like from
Christ.
There?
So that happened.
If I were you, I'd start exploiting that at every conceivable opportunity.
And so then last night was my bachelor night because Pat was out playing games. He was doing his game thing. So I went to I actually got Pat to stop at Trader Joe's for me and get me pub cheese and crackers
yeah.
and salami. So that was my bachelor night dinner.
Awesome.
And here's how insane and pathetic and lame I am. I'm so excited that Courtney Fatboy's midnight movie tonight is Dirty Dancing. Which is like one of the only chick flicks in the entire universe I like. And I've seen it about 300 times. And Bobby said that I've seen it so many times. He said, is it your Star Wars? And I realized, no, it's actually more, it's my Roadhouse. As Roadhouse is to guys, Dirty Dancing is to me.
Have you seen it more than you've seen any other film?
Quite possibly. It's in my top five. My five go-to movies for whenever I'm like sick or depressed, or just like throw it in because it will bring me happiness.
Interesting.
And so I've seen it like a couple of hundred times, but I was so excited. Like it's, I realized I've never seen it on the big screen. I didn't see it when it was released.
How is that possible?
Because it was this big cultural phenomenon, and it was a chick flick. And it's like me not watching Titanic.
Oh, you just resisted?
Yeah, it's like I see something that looks like it's going to be, you know, a sappy chick flick, and women everywhere are embracing it with a fervor. So I immediately go, I will hate this. And so I just don't bother.
Do you hate it? Do you suspect that you will hate it because either A, it's just not the kind of movie that you're going to like because your tastes are divergent from many women, or do you resist it because you resent the idea that something has been crafted for and targeted at you?
I think it's both, really. It's also just the fact that I don't like 99% of movies that are blatantly made for women. I don't like chick flicks.
The tropes that are contained within.
Yeah. I just think they're generally really badly made
right.
movies.
No, fair enough.
And then the fact that mainstream women everywhere were embracing it, I just went, okay, I'm going to hate this. So it was a number of years before I ever saw it, and then I just fell completely
oh my God.
In love with it. So I was so excited. So I'm so excited that I'm going to be seeing Dirty Dancing on the big screen tonight for the first time. I watched Dirty Dancing last night. Just
so
sort like of to like, prepare for it.
So it's like you're tailgating, basically. That's really what it is. It's like you with a barbecue out back, sort of watching the playoff game, you know, on the, you know,
Yeah.
You know, just so you can get ready for the actual Super Bowl.
And if you had gotten here earlier for work, you would have found me here working and listening to the soundtrack from Dirty Dancing.
Wow.
While I was doing my work this morning.
Okay, then. Can I just tell you this? That I don't know that I've ever actually sat down and watched Dirty Dancing front to back. I mean, I've seen it all, like in pieces, because my mom loves that movie. My mom is a huge, huge fan of Dirty Dancing, strangely enough. But I just, I don't know that I've ever, but it's one of those things where I don't know for sure. Like, there are a lot of movies like that, where I know that I've seen all of it. I just don't know how many times. I mean, I must have done it at least once or twice, I guess. I don't know. It's all kind of a blur. But I really don't know of, if you look at all of the various scenes of Dirty Dancing, and you were to, like, look at a chart of how many times I've seen each sequence in the film, I don't know how many times it was because I sat down and watched the movie front to back. And that probably almost never.
I have movies like that. I can't really think of any off the top of my head now, but there are movies that will come on and I'll realize I've seen probably all of this movie in pieces, but I have never actually watched it through.
I've watched Any Given Sunday from beginning to end. Intentionally, I think twice, but I know every line and every scene of that film because every time it comes on, I will watch it from whatever point I catch it at to like whenever like I either have to leave or the movie ends. So I have seen in segments, in its component pieces, I've seen Any Given Sunday probably 25 times. But, you know, and especially with a movie like Dirty Dancing, where it's like you don't really need to see the entire thing because it's not like you're going to end on a big cliffhanger and go, I don't know how it ends. So,
well, Eric D. Snider will be joining me tonight and sitting next to me, and he is a Dirty Dancing virgin. He admitted he was on Ham-Fisted Radio with Fat Boy and I on Wednesday, and he admitted that he has never seen Dirty Dancing.
Wow.
So this will be there will be the guy who has never seen Dirty Dancing sitting next to the woman who could
now
at this point I could almost recite the lines from memory.
Well, you know, we used to do we keep talking about bringing it back and we haven't. We used to do a contest on the show called Making a Scene where it was if somebody could recite an entire sequence or scene or piece of dialogue from memory from a movie.
And I probably couldn't do that because I just don't have that skill. I know that I know people who do, and I actually kind of admire that.
Bobby did it at that poker game.
I can't do it.
When we were at the poker game at Scott Daly's house, he recited a whole sequence from A New Hope, I think. Which people say, well, of course he could. But, I mean, it's not easy.
No.
I mean, you pick the movie you've seen the most or the movie you love the most, it's still hard to do 60 solid seconds of dialogue.
Yeah.
But we get people occasionally who can do it. I knew a guy who could do the entire, The entire speech from Apocalypse Now, where he says, you know, what are you, a soldier? You're not. You're a message boy. You're an errand boy sent by whoever, that Kurtz does to Martin Sheen's character. So, but let me ask you this. So now I have all of these other questions. I had no idea we were even going to be talking about this, but now that you brought it up, so now are you afeared in some way? Like, do you have any apprehension that Snyder won't like the film? And what if he didn't?
He might. I think he'll like it.
What if he just went like, well, that's really bad?
It doesn't offend me.
You're not gonna.
At all.
You wouldn't like. You have no personal investment in whether or not he likes it.
No.
Okay.
Patrick's coming too, and I know that he doesn't really give a damn about Dirty Dancing one way or another.
Okay.
He sort of, patronizingly smiles and pats me on the head and just goes, "Yes, Don, I know you love Dirty Dancing. You know, I get the flu." You know, and I get my pillow and blanket and I get on the couch and he's like, do you need anything? And I'll be like, put in Dirty Dancing for me. And he'll go, okay. It's either like Dirty Dancing, Tombstone, My Man Godfrey. I have like these five go-to DVDs whenever I'm either depressed or sick or something.
So you have kind of gotten to the place, because I was talking about this with Ryan White about how my, I'm no longer such a zealot about imposing my musical taste on other people or like lecturing people about, I kind of got to a point in my life where I was like, hey, you don't like it, whatever. That's like, it's your problem, not mine. So you've kind of gotten, because there was like a time when I would tell people, I went through this period where I was, before it kind of became such a cultural touchstone, and now the work is sort of done for me. There was this period of time after I had seen Glengarry Glen Ross, but before it kind of became, before it became such a frequently referenced thing. And I think the rise of the internet helped with that a lot, because you would see that Baldwin sequence excerpted and put online, and he parodied it himself on SNL a few times, and then of course with 30 Rock. But I would tell people, I'm like, Glengarry Glen Ross. And they're like, I've never heard of that. What is that? And I'm like, it's about real estate, but it's not really about real estate, but it's about sales guys. And their eyes would glaze over. And I would go to like, no, you have to watch it. It's the best movie ever made. And you know, it's my favorite movie of all time. And I would tell people to rent, and I would just badger people about it. And then, you know, sometimes people would come back and they would say, oh, that's really great. And occasionally some people come back and go, that's the worst movie I've ever seen. Or this one, now I turned that off 15 minutes in. And I would look sadly at my shoes, and I would walk away. My whole day was just covered in sackcloth.
I've come to the point now where I will argue content, and I will argue quality, but I know you can't argue taste.
Right.
And so, like, Bobby and I were talking about Dirty Dancing, I think 2 weeks ago, when we were talking about that it was coming up. And he took issue with me, I think, saying that I thought it was a good movie, that he didn't think it was a very good movie. And, you know, and I'll agree that there are some things that are kind of awkward and you know, not brilliantly done. It was a fairly low-budget movie that was made very, very quickly. So it's not a work of genius by any means. But the thing is, though, it evokes a lot of emotion, and it has a really good cast. I mean, you know, Jennifer Grey, Patrick Swayze, sort of, you know, right at the peak of his of his powers. Jennifer Grey's parents are played by Jerry Orbach and Kelly Bishop, who was Lorelai's mom on Gilmore Girls.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got a really terrific cast, and I would argue that it is more than a competent movie, that it's actually quite a good movie.
Well, and if you enjoy it, then it's done.
But if somebody doesn't like it because it just isn't their cup of tea, I mean, you can't argue with that. Taste can't be argued.
Well, and I would also say that if you are entertained by it, if somebody watches it and enjoys it, then it has done its job.
And a lot of it is enjoyable in a very goofy, campy, sort of over-the-top sort of way.
Right.
It is just giggle-inducing to watch some of the dance numbers and stuff. But, I mean, it's just, I don't know. I just love that movie so much. But I learned...
really are adorable.
I think I learned the hard way. I learned this as a film critic when it came to having to review comedies. That comedy is really super, super subjective. And learning that... if I was reviewing a film that was a comedy that I didn't like, and in particular, this would often happen with, like, say, Farrelly Brothers movies, because I just don't really care for them, I had to be really specific about why jokes didn't work for me. Because the thing is, you know, I'm not going to argue with something about it. I'm just not going to argue with people most of the time about if a comedy is good or not. If it makes you laugh, and if it makes you laugh a lot, you're going to think it's good. If it doesn't make you laugh, you're going to think it's bad.
Right.
And the truth is, when it comes to comedy, so much of the time it's really just a matter of, that's not the kind of sense of humor I have. And so it's much easier to argue quality with, like, a drama than it is with a comedy.
Okay, so my final question here would be, so what is the, if you can recall this, do you remember the last movie with which, about which you had a lot of, like, really serious disagreement with people?
Because I just had a little short kerfuffle on Twitter just this last week with Aaron Duran, because he said that The Fountain, Aronofsky's The Fountain, was bad.
Right.
And I said, no, it's not. It is not a bad movie. And that's one of those movies where I if we had been in the same room, I would just be saying, hey, if it confused you, that is not the movie's fault. That's your problem. That doesn't mean the movie is bad because you couldn't follow it.
It doesn't sound like you need to be in the same room to say that. All right, it's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. After this, we'll come back with Mr. Big Jim Willig. He'll be here for another installment of Humor Me Comedy 101 today, talking about the life and work of Mr. Flip Wilson. We've also got your monkey watch, penis watch, corpse watch. And we've apparently made a new tradition of just bumping our gums until like 10 after 2 and never getting to any news. So we'll try to get some news on the other side of this. Also, clue number 5 for the EH Vending Name That Snack Contest. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. You stay right there. Back after this is what we will be.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Somewhere where will he sounds too blue to fly.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network. You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. You just mentioned something during the break. So I got a bunch of emails about this last night, and I've recorded it, but I haven't watched it, which is last night's episode of Community, which apparently is where they're playing Advanced Dungeons & Dragons.
Yes.
And it was, you know what's great is that every email ended with, I know that 9,000 other people have told you this, but I felt like it was my duty to inform you.
So. Well, you should be watching Community anyway. It is very funny. It is one of the very funniest sitcoms that is on TV. Right
I think I'm going to watch it when it first came out. I can't remember whether I did or not, and it seemed like I wanted to like it, and then I didn't. But I think you actually said that it sort of found its footing after a while.
It was not bad from the beginning, but about the middle of the first season, it really sort of found its rhythm. It's kind of like Parks and Recreation that way, which was not particularly good the first season because they were trying to basically recreate The Office. And Amy Poehler doesn't do, you know, Michael Scott
right.
well. She just doesn't play stupid well. And so they sort of reconfigured some things for the second season, came back, and her character much was the same, except her character was much more competent. They weren't having her play dim. And the show just immediately clicked into place and was very, very friendly from that point on.
So among the things I got to watch this weekend, so I got Megapython versus Gatoroid, which, by the way, we got somebody said, I watched that twice last weekend. It's terrible. Also, one of the best things I've ever seen. So there's that. And last night's episode of Community.
You have a full weekend ahead of you,
really?
Sir.
Really? I don't even need to leave the house. Not that I was planning to. You have something going on with your eye over there?
I do. I have like a hair or a piece of lint or something stuck to an eyelash. So it's
I hope it's not a
eye.
Spider egg.
It's probably not a spider
you
egg.
You walked into a spider face first nearly the other day.
Well, I'm yesterday, if I still have a spider egg attached to my eye a day later.
No, it would just now be hatching is the thing. I'm just saying. So welcome now to the Rick Emerson radio program. I got to get introductory music for you. Hold on. Let's see if I can for something for... No, that's
wow,
wrong.
That's epic good. Fail no. with Big Jim.
No, I've got...
Well, I get to follow the nightmare material that is there's a spider egg in your eye.
Let's
that
see.
That is the worst thing I've ever heard a human being say to another.
You got Walk On. That
walk
would work.
On, walk on.
Ladies and gentlemen.
You want my mom to cry every time she hears me come on?
Never walk alone.
Oh, why are you doing... Well, that was weird right now.
Never walk
alone.
Hold it together. Hold it together.
Okay. I don't think I have... I'm not sure what else I might have that I could... let's see. Do I have...
What else do we have?
Hold on, I think I got a little Connie Chung here. If you prefer that, let's see if I can.
Who doesn't prefer a little Connie?
Let's see if I can get a little.
Thank you.
No, I don't want that.
By the way, I just
no,
wanted to show
you.
There's this picture. I will just show to you two guys. A picture of a spider, big spider picture that someone sent me after telling my spider story yesterday. And it was just an email, and it was just this picture of the spider, and that was it. And so I emailed back, and I just was like, why? Why would you do that? And so she followed up. I said, oh, I see that my description of this on the email did not go through. I work for the state, and I'm outside most of the year collecting plant samples. This also means I spend many days covered in spider webs and stupid small spiders all over me. I am very scared of them, too. This one I almost smacked with my face at the nursery, and it scared the crap out of me. It was really hard to get the guts to take the picture, but I did not think people would believe me when I told them how big it was.
Well, that was like that spider that was on the side of my house that I actually had. At one point, I had my wife and Aaron's wife, Jen, get close enough to take the photo because I was too afraid.
Cowering behind them.
It's over there. Oh, gosh. Don't touch
human
it.
Human shield.
And then later, I sort of crept up close enough to kind of go, you know, chink, you know, and then run away. But that the only reason I did it is because... I think after I had Jen and Lara take a photo of it, I was like, but people, you know, people were sort of ridiculing me, and I understand why. But I also wanted to convey the hugeness of the spider.
Which is why you got them to go in there with like one of them holding a quarter and the other one like taking the picture so you could actually see the comparative size.
Well, if that doesn't do it for you, the size of the bite on her hand subsequently was enough to sort of give you an idea of the size of the fangs.
You know, and Lara actually offered to hold a quarter in the frame to give it a sense of scale after she found me rooting around looking for barbecue tongs because I didn't want to hold a quarter close enough. Like the spider was going to somehow pull a zip gun on me or something.
It could leap off of the web at you.
Yeah.
I've seen that on the Discovery
Channel.
And
that's the thing is like, and you know, and I just went out one day and that spider was gone. The web was packed up and the spider had split down.
It had stolen a car and got out of Dodge.
So it's around somewhere. I mean, it's, you know, that's one of those things where it's like.
Roughing up kids on a street corner somewhere.
My girlfriend Malia, she spent time in Costa Rica doing like sort of studying abroad. She told me horror stories about spider webs so massive and strong that they could support a human's weight. I'm just like, okay, so you're telling me this because you never want me to sleep again? Is that it?
Yeah. And that's one of the weird things about
that's why I will never go to the jungle.
It's like when you find, I remember the first time, the first time I saw the movie Arachnophobia.
Oh, my God.
Which
You know, it's
like Barton Fink with spiders.
And I don't know how well that movie has aged because I haven't seen it in many years because of the obvious. I think it's probably aged pretty well because they don't use any bad CGI. There's no animatronic. They're all real spiders. And it was kind of kooky to begin with.
Union spiders.
It was a little campy, you know, from the get-go because it's got John Goodman, you know, as a, you know, there's no spider here. And he's sort of a big mumbling goof in the film. So it's probably aged fairly well. But there's that sequence where they're in the jungle and they're smoking the trees, and then they're just put up the nets to catch everything as they fall out, and you hear this like clink, 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 clink as things, you know, because they're spraying like a sort of like a
knockout gas,
a chemical, a chemical fog into the trees of the jungle, and then they're just catching everything that falls in these big funnels, and there's, you just hear the sounds of like leaves and little insects falling, ding, 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 yeah, dunk, and you hear there's a huge thing fall out of the tree, and then there's the thing that you know is coming, and they get you with anyway, where the spider is like been, you know, he's been knocked out from the gas, he's been rendered unconscious, and never trust anything that's only unconscious in a film ever. Ever.
The stick poking trick is just it's a recipe for disaster.
And there's that thing where he has this huge spider like the size of a car, and he's looking at it under a microscope. And of course, as he's looking at it under a microscope, the spider goes, yeah, and wakes up. And it's like, and you just pee yourself right there in the theater with my girlfriend at the time. And I just, I leapt into her arms like a baby. So it's just, I don't think I've seen that movie again since then, but it was just altogether unnerving.
Well, when they make that that scary evil clown movie that they're making, because that guy did that trailer. This guy did a fake trailer for a fake scary evil clown horror movie, saying that it was a new Michael Bay film. And it was an excellent fake trailer. And it was really creepy and horrible. I was like, wow, I'm sure glad that's not an actual movie. So, of course, somebody picked it up and is now turning it into an actual movie. And I will probably have to go see it because I am quite an aficionado of the horror genre. But I am so terrified of clowns. And that movie is just, it is. It's just going to make me wet myself and vomit probably at the same time.
The thing that I've been sort of toying with how to sort of work into the popular lexicon would be to take the two things that scare people the most and combine them together, which would be, of course, a spider clown. and basically make some kind of like Minotaur, half clown, half spider, and actually plugged it into Google image search, and the closest thing that they could come. Right now, Dawn's got her hands over her face, just sort of like,
why would
God.
You ever say spider clown?
Because I'm copywriting it right here, right now.
Okay, fair enough.
So this is mine. Spider Clown, the movie, which I will probably like a musical, because you got to kind of take the edge off a little bit somehow.
Jesus, God.
But no, kind of like, you know, half clown, half spider.
Yeah, we get it.
You know, with multicolored eyes.
I think it's a high enough concept that I've sussed out what it would probably, God damn.
Hey. Well, I was going to hedge that, though, because I'm going to release that, and it's going to horrify and traumatize a bunch of people. But I'm also actually working
on... that's not enough.
Well, no.
But there's more.
But that's just the preamble.
This is the flip side of it, because you're going to have to sort of like, you know, it's like the comedy and tragedy, something soothing for people. I'm working on a children's book. This is actually not a joke. This is the 100% truth.
The littlest spider clown.
Well, sorry about that.
Baby's first spider clown.
No, it's actually it's called Hairy Fangs, and the fangs is spelled with a PH, and it's the story of the first stand-up comedy spider.
Okay, that's pretty great.
And it's basically about like a spider who's got a bunch of other insect friends. He's got like, you know, a carpenter ant who's got braces. You've got like a mosquito who's like self-conscious about its nose. You got a tick that's got little big man syndrome. All these different insects, and this Harry is trying to be a comedian, and he's dealing with like being ostracized for being a spider and hated like universally, and finding a way to kind of make that a way. It's going to teach kids ultimately how to deal with being different and finding confidence in themselves. So first comes the spider clown movie, which will horrify people, and then like the children's book will come out.
Is this like how Roald Dahl would, like, he would write sort of great, sweet, amusing stories for kids, and then write horrifying stories for adults in which people were inadvertently having sex with leopards?
Yeah, inadvertently?
Not making that up, by the way. Just FYI, in case anybody's... Hey, by the way, Dawn, I've emailed you a little something, as the kids say.
Oh, is this one of those things where I'm going to look at this and I'm just going to be frightened and horrified? Why would you do that?
Well, because I'd like to share these things. It's not... I mean, look, it's no spider clown, but then again, what is? So a listener, I believe Michael, and I apologize if I'm getting the name right, if I'm getting the name wrong, sent this to me. He was looking online, and there was some sort of an online listing for estate sales, and... It's in the by the way, if you want, I emailed this to you, but you can also see it online. It's at rickemerson.com/pictures. Visual aids for February 4th, 2011. It is a oil painting of clowns that was for sale on some website for some guy's estate sale. And so he passed that along to me.
I actually saw the best a great article yesterday. I think it was from a newspaper in Houston. There's a woman who's an artist, and she did this entire gallery show where she took prints of what is his name? The Painter of Light. That horrible mall art guy.
Mapplethorpe?
No, oh, God. Anyway, why can't I remember his name all of a sudden? Anyway, and basically painted clowns into it's often dead clowns into the
the safest okay. clown
into the paintings, and they were brilliant. Oh God, that's horrible.
Yeah, there you go. That's what I'm talking about.
Oh, okay. Look at that.
You can see that at
this is what gives Pennywise nightmares.
You can see that at rickeverson.com/pictures.
Oh dear God.
Visual aids for February 4th. Yeah, so he sent that to me, and I swear to God, he actually said the subject line of the email was
Kincaid,
something like,
"That's the guy's name."
He said, "Here's a photo." He said, "Here's a painting you can buy for dawn."
No.
So you want to go take a look at that? I got to say though, your idea is really good though. The
Harry Fangs
children's book about Harry Fangs, the spider comedian. That's actually really really great. And
the cover I actually already have imagined in my head. It'll be kind of like a close up of his eyes, but it'll have like a pair of sunglasses on, kind of like Mitch Hedberg esque, and like his little whiskers will be kind of like a little like mini like almost like a beard almost, but very disarming. Because I mean, I've been scared of spiders most of my life. And I know that pretty much 90% of other people are as well. So why not find a way to sort of turn that into, a children's book and B, funny? So because comedy seems to be a good disarmer for people that are terrified of things, which right. I think kind of is the other side of the coin to the whole clown aspect. Some people find them funny. Some people find them horrifying for obvious reasons. But, yeah, this is my poor man's copyright. If anybody else tries to come out with, like, a spider-based children's book.
The stroke of genius, by the way, is spelling Fangs with the PH. That really is. That's what makes the entire thing work. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, so. Dad's a hobo spider. Mom's a gypsy moth.
A hobo spider.
You know, and the gypsy moth was, she was used to being a show insect, like a show person.
Yeah.
And they sort of met. You know, the story will come out in the wash eventually. I'm working on writing it.
I am envious of anybody who can successfully write a children's book, because that's a difficult thing to do. That is a tough road to hoe, as they say. But man, and I don't mean to sound callow and craven, or words callow and craven. What does callow mean? Is it like craven?
No, I believe callow is the opposite of craven. Callow is innocent and
isn't that shallow and weak-willed?
Unworldly.
I thought craven and callow were synonyms for whatever. I don't mean to, I don't mean to sound all money grubbing about it. But I mean children's books too. That's like if you can get a good children's book, you are in the chips.
Yeah,
that is really. I mean, that is because it is. You know, you go to the store and there's like 5 billion of them. It seems like, but that's a market that a market that like there is a lot of money to be made, and if you can do it well, because most children's books are not written very well. That's the other thing.
Yeah. You have to have like a children's whimsy to it, like Where the Sidewalk Ends, Shel Silverstein, like genius, because it's not just a children's book, but it's also very much appealing to adults. So if you can find that duality to the whole thing, like you said, it's a license to print money for the most part.
Excellent. Well, we should do some actual, what do you call that?
News. Infotainment.
And now, from the news desk.
Let's call that irritainment.
Dawn Taylor.
People have recovered lost gloves and iPods on public transport, but it may be safe to say that they have usually not found lost snakes. The search is over in Boston for a snake lost a month ago on a Red Line train. The snake, a Dumeril's boa called Penelope, went missing when Melissa Morehouse was riding on the MBTA between Park Street and Andrews Square on January 7th. She was wearing the boa, as she sometimes does, wrapped around her neck. She was one of those people. She said she had checked Penelope several times while riding, and then suddenly the snake was missing. When Morehouse reported the snake missing, MBTA staff and Morehouse searched for the snake on the Red Line car, but came up empty.
And this is in Massachusetts?
It's in Boston, yeah. When Morehouse reported the snake missing and they searched, Morehouse placed an ad on Craigslist and had almost given up hope of seeing Penelope again. Then on Thursday, an MBTA commuter reported seeing the snake on a Red Line train in Dorchester.
See, and I'm not afraid of snakes, but in the right context, I can see how they would absolutely be terrifying, whether or not you had the actual phobia.
Did the snake have a sign that said, "I am deaf, please give me money"? Because that would have been awesome.
Now, keep in mind, of course, this is a boa. This is a big,
it's huge.
Big snake.
Yeah.
So this woman riding on the train saw the snake.
How do you not notice about 40 pounds of snake no longer on your neck?
She alerted the conductor, who walked back to investigate, and then saw the snake.
Tired of these mother effing snakes.
So the train was taken out of service for the day, and then after the search, Penelope was found on the train. She was found by a train attendant, and who was also a snake owner herself. And so,
because
apparently this is popular in Boston.
I would think that we would be at a point where you weren't just allowed to own a huge boa constrictor.
And I will upload this. Here is the snake in question.
Wow, wow.
That is like three pairs of boots right there and a belt to match.
Yes.
I would.
They are not venomous, by the way. They are boa constrictors.
Right, but they can get their crush on, can't
right
they?
Yeah.
That's a thing where they can. I don't think they have to be venomous to kill. I'm not venomous, but I could probably kill somebody.
And it would certainly startle you if, like, say, you were, like, riding downtown on the Max.
Well, it's a thing
and you
totally
just looked under your seat and was like, God, giant snake.
Well, it's that thing where, you know, Alfred Hitchcock said that, speaking of clowns, Alfred Hitchcock said the thing about there's nothing scarier than a clown after midnight because, you know, it was all about context. And it's just this, it is the dissonance, you know, between context and thing that really causes it causes your brain to fall apart sometimes. It's like, I've mentioned this story before, but Alice Cooper one time when he was staying at the Hyatt House in L.A., you know, and Alice Cooper famously has snakes as part of his act, and a boa constrictor actually escaped from his room at one point. Like one of his boa constrictors, Stella, I think her name was, or something. And so Stella escaped and came and vanished into the toilet, which I guess is a thing that happens a lot of times with snake owners, where it's like the snake, there's water or something, and so the snake wants to drink from the water, and then the snake thinks that it's some kind of a burrow, or that it's it looks enough like a snake, you know, whatever, like a
hole.
Snake hole.
It's shaped like me.
Which snake hole just seems like I'm just saying something unbelievably crude. But
clown hut, snake hole, these are all viable things.
All bad, all rejected names for comedy clubs, by the way.
Spider hat.
So the snake vanishes down the toilet, and so Alice like wakes up later or whatever, and he goes like, hey, where'd my snake go? And it turns out that the snake came up in one of the adjacent rooms in which musician Charlie Pride was staying. Charlie Pride goes in to take a whiz in the middle of the night, and there's a 30-foot snake coming out of his toilet.
He's like, that acid is strong. My God.
Never drink the local brandy.
I think Alice Cooper made some reference to if there was anything that was going to turn Charlie Pride white, it would be that. So, good God! All right, here's Don Taylor.
We have a penis watch.
Here's your penis watch for Friday.
You say penis. Yay now.
Yeah, don't cheer until you hear it.
I take a look at my enormous penis, and everything is going my way.
Here's Don Taylor with your penis watch.
Dateline Orlando, Florida.
I'm sorry, Dateline where?
Orlando, Florida.
Sorry.
A temporary employee claims the Future Foam Carpet Cushion Company gave him no training on a peeler machine from which a safety guard had been removed, and its, quote, surgically sharp steel blade sliced through his pelvis, cutting off his penis and testicles while virtually cutting his body in half. Edgardo Tousset sued Future Foam, a 3-year-old Florida producing company, and Baumer of America, which made the peeler machine.
The peeler!
Which is used to cut foam for carpet padding. Peeling machines have a thin blade that spans the width of the mammoth machine, which slices blocks or cylinders of foam as they pass through. According to the complaint, at some point prior to any work-related activities with Future Foam removed protective guarding that was intended to prevent workers from coming in contact with the machine's steel cutting blade. Tousset did not ordinarily operate the machine and had not received any training in the operation of the machine and specifically to conduct the work he was asked to do. Tousset says he was instructed by Future Foam to change out the foam core on the subject peeler machine. When he attempted to release the mandrel, the surgically sharp steel blade was exposed and activated, thereby slicing through the pelvic region of Tousset. The surgically sharp steel blade sliced through Tousset's pelvis, cutting off his penis and testicles while virtually cutting his body in half. He seeks punitive damages for, quote, virtual certainty. I'm not sure what that means. Negligence, strict liability, disfigurement, loss of capacity for the enjoyment of life, medical expenses, wow, loss of earnings, and loss of earning capacity.
This is where this is one of those moments where you, in some ideal world, he would be religious or Buddhist or something, so he could just, you know, you just that's you just want to hit the reset button and start over. It yeah. doesn't matter. You come back as a, you come back as an aphid, and you're still going to be better off, I would think.
He's going to come back as a sticker on that same saw that says, "Please do not operate with your penis."
What is it? What is the thing called a mandrill? Mandrell?
Mandrell, which
like Barbara Mandrell
and the sisters.
I thought it was called a mandrill at first, which seems like that's the second indication you shouldn't use the machine.
Well, the machine has the steel blade and then a protective guarding. I'm not sure, but yeah, it's the mandrill. I think is just the whole thing.
Mandrell.
Yeah.
All right.
One L.
By the way, if somebody just told you that you were going to get your today, you're lucky. You get to work on the peeler. That's where you just yeah. say like, no, I don't think so. Like unemployment
I'm going,
is
I'm
better.
Going back to the temp agency.
Yeah.
Screw you guys.
Yeah. Manpower sent me to the wrong place yeah. today. No, thank you.
Yeah. The lawsuit also claims, probably not unsurprisingly, that the state of the machine was in violation of one or more state or federal regulations. What with it not having any kind of safety guards.
Why are the safety? Why would they even be removable? Like, why would you even make a machine on which the safety guard could be removed by somebody other than, like, you know, the factory that made it?
Yeah. You know, on a mammoth machine with something called a peeler that is a surgically sharp steel blade. Yeah.
Well, there's like that. It's like that thing that they have in laundromats, which is not just a thing that came out of the fever dream imagination of Stephen King, but that thing that the mangler, which is an actual machine that have in industrial laundromats, where the mangler
something from Skeleton Crew.
I think there is in one of his anthologies. I think it might be Night Shift. There is a story called The Mangler, which is terrible.
Yeah, it's in Night Shift
because it involves, I swear to Christ, like an angry laundry machine that follows the guy home, and it's like at one point he's like walking down an alley, and it's like the laundry machine is at the end of the alley, like waiting for him, and it's just
swinging a chain.
Just read this, and you're like, what did I pay $3.99 for? But the mangler, and I mean the fact that it's called the mangler as opposed to even the peeler, which you.
Well, I'm assuming that perhaps that is where we get the phrase that something was mangled. From the mangler.
I don't know. I'm thinking that maybe it's the other way around. I'm thinking that maybe the mangler is not like the actual industrial term for the machine. That's just what it came to be known as because one guy too many. Well, in fact, in his memoir in On Writing, King talks about working with this guy Harry who had hooks for hands, and he lost both hands. Because he was feeding sheets into the mangler, and it was like sheet, 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 hand, sheet, 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 and it was like, and they just took him right off. And so he said that he was every now and again there would be a guy who would pass out from the heat or from exhaustion or from dehydration working in this incredibly hot laundromat in Maine over the course of the summer, and would just tumble head first into the sheet mangler. And so working on a mangler is a thing. Like that's when you realize the importance of seniority and tenure. So you can just pass that along to
college.
The intern.
Yeah. That's when you go, man, I guess maybe I should have paid more attention in school.
But the peeler is only one step removed from that.
Yeah.
What machine do you get to work on today? The peeler.
AKA the Widowmaker.
Yeah. I mean, because the thing is, like, you're not the thing that ideally would be peeled, but you realize it is a conceivable possibility.
You are easily peelable, yeah. if you will.
You are smaller than the pieces of foam that are being peeled.
Yeah.
Therefore, it would be easy to peel your pelvis.
Yeah, I mean, that is, and it's not like you are possessed of some sort of exoskeleton. I mean, there really is... You're soft and spongy. I don't care who you are. So, goddamn you. I mean, that's like a thing where it's like the rock may beat scissors, but sharp metal blade beats like you every time. Goddamn. In Soviet Russia, blah 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 blah. Peels
yeah,
you.
It's just a shame because this sounds like a magic trick gone horribly awry. Why couldn't it have happened to Chris Angel? That's my only question.
Oh Jesus!
Did you look up Peeler?
No, I looked at a. Now,
did you look up spider clown?
Listeners are now sending me pictures of giant spiders.
Okay.
There's a guy in the desert with a giant spider on his chest.
That's great. Yeah. Well,
yeah. Don't send me any more.
Do I shoot it? Do I shoot it?
Yeah.
Okay. By the way, the mandrill apparently is a shaft upon which the blades ride. So I guess I would have to look up. I'm afraid I was going to Google a picture of the peeling machine, but that's a thing where I can't decide if I want to see it or I don't want to see it. The
peeler machine.
Well, you know, when I was working in Washington State, I lived in Spokane, which is right near Idaho, and Idaho has a lot of timber industry there, not as much as Oregon, but there's a lot of it. And there's a there's a timber a wood mill not too far from where I worked, and every now and again you would get a guy that would get killed there because he was doing what they call pulling green chain, which is one of the worst jobs you can have, and that is where you have basically, I mean, they're entire trees. I mean, they're logs stripped of basically of the branches and the leaves, but it's an entire tree, and the job of the guy pulling green chain is to guide the tree as it sort of comes in off the truck into a machine that they call the crusher. And that's the whole thing, is just to make sure that it goes in straight and doesn't go in sideways. And, you know, maybe once, twice a year, there'd be a guy who just we actually had a listener who of our radio station at the time, who I think had been well in his cups the night before, and I think chose the wrong day to skip the second cup of coffee and just right into the crusher at one point. And it's like, that's the thing where you're just like, man, you're coming out in like a preserves jar. I mean, there's just no good ending to that.
Well, I believe I've told you that when I was in culinary school, one of the things they warned us about was the giant industrial mixers. And if you are familiar, if you've ever used a KitchenAid mixer, for example, because that's what the Hobarts are. A KitchenAid is a small version of the Hobart mixer. And what it has is it has a paddle that is open on the inside. And it's kind of like an upside-down triangle. And it fits into the thing, and the thing kind of orbits around like this, and it's excellent. But the thing, it turns this way as it's going around.
It's like a carnival ride where it's got the cars that spin as they all rotate around.
And so one of the things when you go to culinary school, they warn you about certain dangers, you know, about hot pans and the proper use of knives and that sort of thing. And they're like, if you drop your rubber spatula or a wooden spoon or something into the mixer, turn the mixer off
before you reach in.
Do not reach into the mixer. Never reach into the mixer.
I get the timing to not.
We were told this over and over and over again. And sure enough, I was in my bake shop class one day when a guy reached into the mixer.
Oh, jeez.
Got his hand in the blade, and the thing kept rotating around, and it broke like four bones in his hand. The guy was screaming like nobody's business and had to be taken away. And when he came back the next day, he was in a cast.
The souffle was delicious.
But yeah, when you get into, and I saw another accident with a guy cleaning a knife inappropriately as well. So, you know, but
with his eyes. So,
but with here's the picture of the peeler. And I think the problem with the whole setup with the peeler, particularly if the guard is missing, is it would appear that the surgically sharp steel blade is really right about at crotch level.
Yeah. Happy Friday, everybody.
Take a look at my enormous penis. And my troubles start.
Or where it used to be.
Has anyone seen my enormous penis? Just here.
You're right. I do need to wait before I cheer a penis watch.
They also make something called a foam crushing machine. It crushes
from
all kinds of foam.
Co.
Okay.
Never work with foam, apparently.
Jesus.
You're well endowed.
Rick Emerson radio program. Unbelievably, there's like another 45 minutes of this show still to go. Everybody just buckle in. We're here with Mr. Big Jim Willig here in just a few. We'll do today's installment of Humory Comedy 101 today, talking about the life and career of Mr. Flip Wilson. We've also got clue number 5, the E.H. Vending Name That Snack Contest for this week. Here is Don Taylor.
Oh, I didn't think we were coming right back to be here.
I think that's actually only like the second story we've done today.
Yeah.
So,
A city worker died after an accident involving an automated trash truck in Norfolk Thursday morning.
You're just a relentless up today.
No, she's talking about various job openings if you look at it from the abstract.
Exactly. It's all one big employment watch as far as I'm concerned. Police identified the victim as 51-year-old Jerry Holton of Virginia Beach, Virginia. Shante Wallace, who lives near where the accident occurred, said he was working alone. Nobody was there with him. I feel like they should always have two people. According to police, they were first notified of the accident when a citizen called around 9 a.m. to report the scene. Not really explaining what happened to him. So this is a terrible story. We will just put this aside and move on to something
else. Put it in the crusher.
This is a happy story. This will make you feel. A horse is doing well after it was rescued in the Cedar Mill area on Wednesday afternoon. Twalton Valley Fire and Rescue crews were called to Northwest 107th Avenue after the horse, named Curio, became stuck in deep mud in a fenced area behind a home Firefighters and a veterinarian worked to safely remove the horse. Curio was exhausted and hypothermic following the ordeal, but fire crews said the horse was standing and seemed to be doing fine.
All right. See, now I do feel better. See? Hey, by the way, I just want to make those as nothing to do with this story, but you were talking about romantic comedies earlier and Dirty Dancing and how you're going to see Dirty Dancing tonight with Eric D. Snider and so forth. Now, you mentioned resisting that movie when it first came out, not seeing it on the big screen ever because you didn't want to, you know, you didn't like the idea that it was going to be a romantic comedy that was sort of targeted at you because you dislike most elements of romantic comedies. This reminded me of something. I had the best idea the other day. You know what somebody needs to make? Somebody needs to make a romantic comedy, perhaps starring a whoever today's version of like a Matthew Lillard kind of a guy is. I am amazed that somebody hasn't made a romantic comedy based on the 2012 destruction of the Earth, according to the Mayan calendar. And it would be about a guy who gets idiot hippie chicks to sleep with him under the theory that the world is about to end.
Oh, I like that.
See?
That
and it's the whole, and then it's the whole thing where he starts off as a cad, but then realizes that he just needs the love of that one special lady to turn him around and make him be a man, as opposed to, you know, Lothario.
Your heart is Mayan?
Laura and I were talking about this the other day because
Mayan.
She's constantly surrounded by just a bunch of like crystal worshipping nitwits, and it's the thing about girls like that is like they are just so unbelievably gullible. They just fall for any sort of like, and it'll balance your energies. If I do this with my penis, which is always how it ends. It, like, whatever it is, it's like it always – it's like balancing something or like their chakra or like your bodily humors need to be adjusted slightly with my penis. And but the number of her hippie friends, all of them sort of surprisingly attractive because you think of hippies as just being a bunch of, you know, just like scraggly dirt wearers. But the number of her hippie girlfriends who fall for this sort of thing is, I mean, either astounding or not astounding, depending on your worldview. So it seems like there's a, you know, guys could be making a little bit of hay about that. Like, hey, the world is about to end, you know, and this is going to be our last, it's going to be our last, you know, 18 months on Earth or whatever. We need to live while we're alive and then et cetera. And then it's timely as well.
See, clocks a ticking.
Like, I'm just saying.
My brain is just going in overdrive.
Right. I'm just
going
to check that off the list of ideas.
Okay.
All right. There you go. Here's Don Taylor.
Let's do our monkey watch.
Here's your, you know, you're doing that because, you know, we don't actually have the theme.
I thought we got the monkey watch theme back again.
No.
Okay.
No, we never got
it. You know
that
what that means? It means you have to do the monkey sound.
Do it.
Here's your monkey watch.
Okay.
I can't really do a monkey sound. I just, I would if I could. I have no shame. I'm just a...
The North Carolina state veterinarian ordered the monkey that attacked the woman over the weekend to be euthanized Tuesday.
What?
I don't know if you were aware of the monkey attack
over
the weekend. Joe, the black-capped capuchin monkey, was tranquilized by North Carolina zoo officials and taken to a local vet. Three people had been bitten by Joe. The first, most recent victim, Patricia Knight, was sitting Joe when he attacked her over the weekend. Knight said she was bitten while she tried to change his water bowl. The vet will perform a rabies test on Joe, and results will be shared by those bitten by him. John Stacey, Joe's owner, said, "Joe is a peaceful, loving animal. They have this blown out of proportion. He's not wild or dangerous. He's never been wild. He was born in captivity." Okay, here's a hint. It's still a wild animal, even if it's born in captivity.
People just think that it's going to end like Any Which Way But Loose, where you just get like a 16-wheeler and you taste the open road and the monkey pretends to get shot and everything's fine. But no, it will eat your face if you give it half a chance.
Stacy says he's owned Joe since the monkey was 6 weeks old. He recently left the monkey in his grandson's care. When the grandson left to find a new place to live, he left the monkey with this woman, and then the monkey unsurprisingly bit her. And now they're trying to figure out if they're going to, like, put him to sleep.
You know, it's like people can't even get their kids to behave for long periods of time. And those are actual human children that are meant to live with other humans. The idea that you got a thing that's supposed to be living, like, in the jungle somewhere, and that occasionally it acts in a way that you didn't anticipate, that doesn't really – shouldn't really surprise. That's why I was amazed that the woman was allowed to have the boa constrictor.
Yeah.
Because it just – it seems – because it's like you're gonna, like, I think in California, we were just talking about hedgehogs yesterday. In California, you actually can't own hedgehogs anymore. They've decided that they're just – because they're not a natural part of the ecosystem and, you know,
all your gold rings. And
exactly.
Can't catch them.
And so they've just started to really like crack down on exotic pets that people can have. So it is surprising to me when they allow people to have like primates of any kind just sort of lurking around your house, unless they are one of those service monkeys, which do exist and which are awesome, which I have thought about feigning some sort sort of handicap just for the purposes of tanning.
My dad had a friend who had a monkey, and he brought the monkey to our house once when I was a kid, and it just ran all over the place and peed on things. And then our dog would, like, always, for, like, the rest of his life, our dog would keep peeing on the places where the monkey had peed, and we could never clean it up enough so the dog wouldn't try to out-pee the monkey pee smell or something. And it was just like, thank you, guy with monkey.
As primitive as monkeys may be, I know very few monkeys that are Juggalo fans. So, I mean, that means they got one up on the human the human echelon.
Somebody's actually demanding, somebody sent an email that said, screw Megapython or Gatoroid. Said, I am demanding to see Juggaloid versus Octomom.
Juggalo versus Spider Clown.
In 3D. The musical.
Here's Don Taylor.
A rescue effort wrapped up yesterday afternoon at the Liberty Memorial in Kansas City, Missouri, after a worker fell approximately 12 feet into a pit inside the World War I Museum. Museum spokesperson Denise Rendina said the man is a museum employee who was in an employee-only area. While he was working, he slipped and fell into the pit. His co-workers called the fire department in an effort to get him out. According to rescue crews, the employee did not sustain any life-threatening injuries. Why is there a pit inside a World War I museum?
It's an idiot trap, and apparently still very active and dangerous.
Well, I don't know. Why is there a pit in the middle of Sparta? I mean, and there's not even a safety railing around it. I mean, what is that about? Like, why would you just keep a bottomless pit in the middle of your, the main street, you know, of your town? Unless it's just part of their, charming eugenics program that they have, which apparently makes them heroic.
Put it in the Darwin hole.
Didn't you have a corpse watch yesterday?
Are we going to get to, do you have a corpse watch? Because if you have, does your mom have a corpse watch? Because
I have a corpse watch. You made it sound like your corpse watch was going to be better than my corpse watch.
My corpse watch can beat your corpse watch.
I can get it right now. That's what I'm saying. If you actually have one, I can find mine while you're reading yours. It was going to be sort of a follow-up. It was going to be a supplemental thing.
Well, then I will do mine first.
Let me locate that as I play the theme. Here is your...
My mom is a corpse, I'll have you know.
Soon, Rick. Too soon.
Infinity. Here's your corpse watch.
I'm digging up bones. I'm digging up bones.
Oh, my God.
Exhuming things that's better left alone. I'm resurrecting memories of love that's dead and gone. Yet tonight I'm sitting alone.
How dare you use the sultry voice of Randy Travis for your own sick amusement?
Yeah, that is. You can thank a guy named Matt Peterson for that. If you go back and you listen to all of our watch themes, you can tell what point they were created in the show's history, because a lot of it has to do with the, they were suggested by a certain producer or whoever I was working with at the time, and I used to work with this huge Haystacks Calhoun looking redneck, and I love Matt, he's a great guy, but he's this huge wall of tobacco chewing greatness,
and part time necrophilia enthusiast,
big country music fan, and actually we were trying to figure out the corpse watch theme, and it was me and Matt and Bruce Agler in a room, and one of the two of them suggested digging up bones, and it's been like, that's awesome. So here is Don Taylor.
Christians in Nepal are finalizing a plan for an unprecedented corpse parade outside the parliament amid a row with the Hindu community over burial grounds in the capital. Christians last week threatened to parade their dead outside the parliament in the capital if the government failed to provide them new burial grounds after the trust that manages Pashupatinath barred the minority community from burying their dead in the forest near the temple.
All protesters do here is just ride unicycles and talk about weed and wear a Dr. Seuss hat.
Hindu activists in the country have rejected the community's claim for a burial site in the forest near the 5th century
Hindu
shrine.
That really is going to the mattresses like right away. Like, give us what we want or we're going to just parade dead bodies around your building like forever.
John Cleese unavailable for comment.
God damn.
Located on the banks of the Bagmati River, the place is regarded as the most sacred temple of Shiva and the oldest Hindu shrine in Nepal. Representatives of Nepal's Christians claim they do not have enough burial grounds for their dead in the overcrowded capital. So,
wait a minute. So where are they getting these bodies from?
Well, I guess they're just unable to bury them now.
This is just bodies that are stacking up at homes everywhere?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. The guy said that one guy said they were opposed to the demand of the Christians to acquire land for burying their dead. The government should arrange alternative land for them to bury, and said we cannot allow them to bury their dead by breaking an age-old tradition. So basically, yes, the Christians needing to bury their dead people are putting together a corpse parade.
Due to our purchasing error, we have actually got our 2012 corpses in early. We've got to get these 2011 corpses out, so we are cutting the middleman and passing the savings directly on to you.
So the Christians are saying, well, look, let us use your burial ground. The government is saying, well, no, because it's used for something else. It maybe violates your tradition. And so meanwhile, just everybody who dies is just being stuck in a pile somewhere.
I guess so, yeah.
I smell a Weekend at Bernie's sequel coming right up out of the ground.
Is this sort of like how brunch is just all of the stuff they couldn't get rid of, for like the last two meals at the restaurant, and they just stir it all into some sort of a...
Welcome to scraps. A
casserole.
Something like that, yeah.
Well, waste not, want not, I suppose. All right. Well,
the recycling gun horribly askew.
What a terrible job that must be, though. Like, if you're the guy who gets, like, you're the family member who wakes up last, and so you're the one that they voted on to carry granddad's putrefying remains around the government building for, like, you know, all day. I mean, that's a whole wardrobe you just have to burn when you're done. There's no getting that sent out. Jesus.
I just hope if they do this that there's plenty of press coverage, because I want pictures.
And how do they so it's a corpse parade.
Yeah.
So what does that mean in reality? It's not like they're getting a float or something. So,
well,
I mean, is it like, are you in a wheelbarrow?
I'm assuming you wouldn't want to carry them. So, yeah, you're going to probably
doing the fireman's carry with grandma.
Some kind of a cart.
Or at least 41% of her.
A Monty Python like cart piled with corpses or something. I don't know.
Does everybody have to carry their own corpse, or is it just sort of, do you get to rotate every now and again? Sort of like a speed dating kind of a thing?
You probably volunteer to carry someone else's corpse if they're getting tired.
You don't want to end up being like a scab, like, you know, somebody else gets fired from corpse carrying and you get brought in at like a cut rate, right? So you got to carry the corpse down the middle of the street. It's just
I just like the idea that it would be sort of catch as catch can. That you're like, some people are like, there's like three guys carrying a body, then the next one it's somebody like a little red wagon, and then after that it's like they've got, you know, kind of a hand cart, so dad's propped up on the hand cart and they're just wheeling him along however you possibly could.
I wonder who had this,
so he's strapped to a skateboard.
I wonder who had this in the How the Zombie Apocalypse Happens pool.
Seriously, where is this happening?
This is in Nepal.
Okay, well, let's see.
Next on the list of places for your wife to visit, I'm sure.
I've got this from CBS News. This is part two of our Corpse Watch. They call it the Room of Forgotten Souls, says this article. The story, and there's no byline here. It's just this is by David W. Freeman of CBS News. They call it the Room of Forgotten Souls. The storage area at Oregon State Mental Hospital, where the cremated remains of 3,500 former patients and inmates were stashed away. Now, the decrepit 128-year-old hospital, the site where One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest was filmed, is trying to match the 3,500 sets of remains with surviving relatives. It won't be an easy task. On Friday, the Oregon State Hospital published online the names, birthdays, and dates of death for former patients and prison inmates who died between 1914 and the 1970s. The remains were discovered recently in corroded copper canisters. Some of them had fused together after years of neglect.
Turning into giant corpse batteries.
Officials were able to identify several canisters of remains. Relatives have claimed those belonging to some 120 people since lawmakers first drew attention. Other remains have been identified but not claimed. So that's what, like, you get a phone call saying, like, to go pick up the ashes of great aunt Margie or something, and you just opt out. The first patients moved into Oregon's new 620-bed mental institution this month, leaving behind a crumbling hospital that had toxic paint, asbestos, and a leaky roof. 40% of the hospital was unusable, left to collect pigeon droppings and piles of antique medical equipment.
Ooh.
My big regret, by the way, is that they didn't let people really tour this before they closed it and started to tear it down. So there you go. Oh, by the way, the hospital, this will surprise everybody, was harshly criticized in 2008 for poor management practices after federal investigators found patient rooms filled with mice, many deaths from pneumonia, and outbreaks of scabies, along with 400 cases of patient-on-patient assault during a single year. And they showed a room, a shot, by the way, of this room, and it was amazing. It was just this room that was just lined It was like one of those. It was like a like one of those storage rooms where Mormons keep their year's supply of canned goods. It was just this room with shelves and then just these endless small little copper canisters that kind of looked like. They looked like miniatures of those old, like, metallic milk canisters that you would see that were, like, 3 or 4 feet high. They were sort of like – they were, like, 8-inch high versions of that. And then some of them looked sort of like – they were, like, sort of like British sweets for – British sweet tins. They're just these sort of, like, circular canisters that were, like, I don't know, like about 4 inches high and around. And so that presumably that was for when there was – I don't know. Somebody was like real small or something, or there was just less of them to less of them to preserve. So, anyways, it was like 3,500 of these, and and the question is like, where are they now? Are they just sort of like they removed them from the hospital, and they're just sitting in some room somewhere.
Yeah, one of those you store it facilities.
Waiting for.
I mean, the first month was only a dollar.
Waiting for people to come pick them up. So yeah, but they never let anybody tour the building, which I am filled with regret over. So, all right. Well, in any event, so there you go. There's your double corpse watch for Friday right here on the Rick Emerson radio program. Where the hell is my clothes? But then, all right, there we go.
Oh.
God Almighty.
I'm digging up bones. I'm digging up bones. Exhuming things that's better left alone. I'm resurrecting memories of a love that's dead and gone. Yet tonight I'm sitting alone, digging up bones.
All right. Oh, by the way, Michael in Vancouver wants us to know. I did get his name correct. Michael in Vancouver is the one who sent the photograph, a picture of that oil painting of clowns. He said, it's for sale now. I was tempted to go pick it up. He said, still am. It's unclear. It didn't say what they were... didn't say what they were selling it for, like what the cost was. I don't know. It's an estate sale, but it didn't look like it was an auction or anything. But they didn't list the actual price. So, all right. God almighty. We'll do a little break here. We'll come back on the other side. We will have, Mr. Jim Willig with Humor Me Comedy 101 today, talking about the life and career and legacy of Mr. Flip Wilson. That's on the way. Plus, clue number 5 for E.H. Vending's Name That Snack Contest. That's on the way. Stay there. It's the Rick Emerson radio program.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
All right.
Let's regroup.
Today's show just... It's not that it's been a bad show by any stretch of the imagination. It's just that you came in with that spider clown thing, and it's like right out of the gate with your appearance on the show today. Just things started to go very, very wonky.
It's the harbinger of sorrow right over here.
God damn!
Feels like it ought to be a Thursday.
How do you mean? Oh, because of Anna Griffin ought to be sitting here.
No,
because
you get all wonky and things tend to go kind of squirrely on Thursdays.
My morning, it was like a Thursday morning actually. The whole business of like with the shaver and then the viso and all that. So you're right. It very much was like that. And then I got this. Here's the thing. Never mind. I was. It's just been one of those days. I mean, it's one of those days, and one of those weeks, because I had the issue with the shaving this morning, and then there was that business with the toilet today. Mm-hmm. And again, I really have to do salute you for coming in and just saying, like, look, if you get the plunger, I'll deal with this. And it's
I get things done, Rick Emerson.
No. And it's also
I take care of business.
But it's also like an honor thing. Like, if you were the one, because it's like you very easily could have said, I walked in there to use the toilet, but it was overflowed, so I opted not to. You could have just feigned, that it was like that already. Because it is understood that if you are the one who is using the toilet when it overflows, and it's on you to get it fixed, which sucks, because quite frequently you are not the one. I mean, in any situation, if you flush the toilet, it starts to overflow, and there's that horrible moment when you flush the toilet and it doesn't immediately start Coriolising its way down, and you just go, oh God, no! And it's like when you just see the surface remain relatively level, and it's almost like the water just sort of jiggles a little bit, but then doesn't actually lower, and there's a stasis for a second, and then it starts to rise. And when the water level in the toilet begins to rise, that's one of the worst things that can happen to your day. I mean, that will ruin your entire morning, your entire afternoon, because then what is the best case scenario there? The best case scenario, and this really only works if you live alone or if you just are in an office with nobody else. The best case scenario for the clogged toilet is that you leave it alone for a while, and you come back later, you know, like maybe an hour later, and, you know, ideally you've not had to use the bathroom in that time because then you just face a series. That's like a Hobson's Choice of nobody, of just like of unbelievable proportions where you're just...
You're reacquainted with a sink?
Yeah, that, but it's like, but even, but that, that only works. That's a thing that I think people think about in the back of their mind is like, using the sink as a toilet, that is like eating one of your companions on an airplane flight. You know that it's there as an option, but yeah. You break that out at the last possible moment. I mean, you wait because you know. The minute you do that, that is when somebody's going to walk in. You will have forgotten the door. The girl you've been pining for since high school will suddenly, like, you know... You know, is it like a peer on your porch, you know?
As a plumber.
Yeah. It's like that is just an invitation for some sort of horrifying embarrassment. But the best case scenario is that you leave the toilet alone for like an hour, and then you come back later and you hit flush, and whatever was in there has magically just dissolved, and the thing just works. But that almost never happens. What's the second best scenario? The second best scenario is you get the plunger, and then immediately, you know, it's like the water level goes down, and then you put... And let me just say this about the toilet. Just like when you lose your car keys and then you hear that telltale jingle jangle like in your pants pocket or your purse or like underneath the sofa cushion, and you go, oh, thank God. There is no better way to make you happy. There's no happier sound than after the toilet has been plugged and not working for a while, you pull the handle and it just starts swirling around. It goes glug, 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 and it drains. And and it's like this huge weight has just been taken off your shoulders. Because otherwise, it's like you can't. The clogged toilet makes it impossible to move forward with your day. That's the thing. Is it just like unless you're just using the bathroom at like some place like a restaurant where you can just sort of run for the door, like that is the thing. You can't get anything done because you know that it's lurking out there. You know it's waiting for you again because at some point you have to whiz. That's just a.
I've had an incident at an ex-girlfriend's house where she didn't inform me that it was at her family's house, that the family bathroom, the only functioning one, was upstairs, and it was a low flow. And that's just, like you said, that's an invitation for, like, the worst
possible scenario. That's one of those hippie toilets where it uses, like, one-third the water or something.
Yeah, it's like a thimble. It's like a turlet with, like, a thimble on top.
Turlet. Shouldn't be funny, but it is. Well, I have no point here. So this whole observation about toilets is brought to you by Squires Electric. Doesn't really make any sense. But, you know, it's all part of the abstract wonder and amusement that is the Rick Emerson Radio Program, of which they are a proud sponsor, making things like this possible on a daily basis, along with each and every one of our very valued and prized listeners. You can contact Squires Electric at squireselectric.com or 503-252-1609, 503-252-1609. And I guess it actually does make sense in a way because somebody, when Joe Squires was here and he was talking about electricity, and somebody said, well, you know, I was asking about amps and watts and volts and joules and whatever. And a guy actually emailed me later on. And I think Joe Squires said something like this. He said electricity is a lot easier to visualize if you think of it as water. And he said, you know, like the pressure is the amps and the amount of water in the reservoir is like the joules or whatever. And the thing is, it actually didn't make it any easier for me to understand because electricity, not unlike the plumbing system, is just one of those things. It either works or it doesn't work. And when it stops working, you are hosed.
What you did there.
And you got to just, you just got to call a guy. Because you can't plunge, you can't plunge the outlet. I mean, you can, but it would just be stupid. I mean, It was just
Radio darling Rick Emerson found dead today.
I mean, unless you're like Dawn just plunging her toaster with a fork, in which case that's like a one-time procedure anyway. I mean, it's like Daffy Duck's greatest trick. You can only do it once. So, you know, don't screw around with that. If you go something that goes wonky with your electrical system at home, or if you just need it inspected, installed, updated, repaired, you contact Squires Electric. That is squireselectric.com at 503-252-1609. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors. 503-252-1609 or squireselectric.com. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, they can make your life easier in ways almost beyond imagining. That is squireselectric.com.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. 503-505-6964. Don't forget to join us next week when our guests will include on Monday Mr. Ryan White, music editor from The Oregonian, and on Tuesday from the FX program Justified, Joel Carter. And it's going to be here. So the new season of Justified starts on Wednesday. On Tuesday, Joel Carter will be here. So that is all. It's all coming up next week, ladies and gentlefolk. We're here with Don Taylor and Mr. Big Jim Willig. And that means it's time for another installment of Humor Me Comedy 101. Will you please give your attention to the man to my immediate right?
Thank you very much, Rick. Well, the one thing that we all have in common is that we all want to be the first person to do something. The first person to fly across the Atlantic Ocean. The first person to split the atom. The first person to beat Kobayashi in a hot dog eating contest. Big ups to you, Joey Chestnut.
Woo!
It is this pioneer spirit that pushes us to work harder, that compels us to go further, that drives us all to want to be that much better than the French. Now, television is a ripe landscape for this. Pioneers are well documented, from I Love Lucy, the first TV show to have reruns, to The Last Scroll of the Apocalypse, a.k.a. the first televised reality show, known as An American Family from way back in 1971. Now, it was around this time that another pioneer of comedy persuasion launched his self-titled TV show, and by doing so, claimed a piece of history for his or herself, depending on who you ask. I'm referring to, of course, Claro Flip Wilson. I think I'm saying that horribly wrong. The Flip Wilson Show was the first successful major network television variety show headed by an African-American, coming only second in the Nielsen ratings to some train wreck called All in the Family. Now, how's that for a kid who grew up one of 18 children? Eat that, Octomom. And what's even more impressive than having that kind of stature is, as famous and talented as he was, Flip gave it all up so that he could spend more time with his family. So what if Dad wore a dress sometimes in answer to the name Geraldine? He's still a pioneer and the topic of the week. So with that, I turn the spotlight to the two other cross-dressers sharing the studio with me at this time, Mr. Rick Emerson and Don Taylor. Your thoughts on the ever-so-lovely Flip Wilson.
Don Taylor.
I remember being a very small child and watching the Flip Wilson Show. My father, for all of his faults, was a big fan of comedy. And because of my dad, I spent my early years listening to Smothers Brothers albums and watching Marx Brothers films. And my dad loved Peter Sellers. And so for some reason, he loved Flip Wilson. My dad was a huge racist, but apparently it was okay if the black folks were, like, entertaining him.
It's strange how that doesn't extend to entertainment sometimes with racists.
Yeah.
As long as they'll amuse me on Saturday nights, then I suppose it's okay.
And my father especially found the Geraldine stuff hilarious. And I'm really not sure, I've never understood why men in particular seem to find cross-dressing so hilarious, and why culturally we've always seemed to have found men cross-dressing so darn funny, but we as a people do, and I do remember being a small child and watching my dad with, like, tears rolling down his face, just convulsing with laughter, watching Flip Wilson doing his Geraldine sketches.
And one of the things that's about the Flip Wilson Show that, and is the same thing in my household, where it was, you know, and if you were to, you know, meet my dad and spend just 30 seconds with him, he would not strike you as a guy, I think not unlike your dad, who would necessarily, you know, schedule his life around the Flip Wilson Show. And yet it was always on. And it was one of those things that they would talk about all the time. And my dad and, you know, what was the thing that the Geraldine, was it The Devil Made Me Do It?
Devil Made Me Buy This Dress.
Yeah. And that was the thing that members of my family, and it's like my grandparents said that. And you wouldn't think that they would be watching it either. And it was one of those... It's not to get too all navel-gazing and philosophical about it, but it is one of those things, not unlike music, where comedy and entertainment, it has some strange ability to cut through all the various layers of your personality in most cases, and no matter who you're dealing with, and go right to just the base of your brain, where if it makes you laugh, you know, or if it entertains you or thrills you, or if it's a song that you really like, that it circumvents all of the mechanisms that society or your family or your parents whoever put in place sometimes would keep you from, you know, from enjoying that. And it's especially, you know, it is especially notable when you look back and you realize the number of high profile entertainers that were associated with the Flip Wilson Show, or that he had on as guests, or that who worked for him as writer. George Carlin was one of his writers.
Absolutely,
Carlin's actually been interviewed a lot, and he talked about it being, and you'll hear a lot of, like, Judd Apatow will tell these stories about working on, like, the Larry Sanders Show. Carlin has talked about working on the Flip Wilson Show as being, in a way, a sort of a comedy boot camp, because it's that thing where it's like you've... you know, it's not like you're just playing some little club in Oklahoma City. Like, you know, this is a national television program, and it's a show that everybody is watching, and, like, you got to be funny, and the jokes have got to work, and the lines have got to be perfectly crafted. And so it's people sitting in a room, and they are polishing and honing and tweaking every joke until every moment works perfectly and works flawlessly. And so that is why, you know, that's why you get guys that come out of shows like that that are just where they've got it just down to a science, down to an art. Because, you know, especially a guy like Flip Wilson, where at the end it's all being channeled through one guy.
Yeah.
And so it's, you know, I'm not trying to diminish Flip Wilson's contribution to it either. Obviously, it was his persona and it was his delivery that made that show work. And it was because he had such a strong persona, not just when he was doing the drag character, but he himself had such a specific kind of delivery that, you know, that everybody had to sort of shape themselves around his kind of comedy and around. And the other thing about the Flip Wilson show is that he himself always, you know, there's that whole thing about comedy always being, you know, that it's not funny until somebody cries, you know, that the good comedy hurts a little bit. But he managed to avoid that, to the best of my memory anyway. I don't ever remember there being any sort of mean-spirited comedy on that show. It seemed a little Carol Burnett-esque in that way, in that the comedy was very good-natured or self-directed,
yeah,
as opposed to being outwardly directed.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Plus, you know, the fact that, much like Bill Cosby, Flip's comedy style was very much storyteller-based.
Right.
And I think what kind of gave him that crossover appeal to both non-racists and racists alike was the fact that, you know, when it's funny, it's funny.
Right.
You know, you're going to laugh either way, regardless of how you feel about this particular person's race or ethnic background.
I know my dad, for example, one of the characters that Flip Wilson did that my father found especially funny was the Reverend Leroy.
Oh, yeah.
Who was the pastor of the Church of What's Happening Now. And for my dad particularly, because my father had very little use for religion or for, like, hippies and hipsters.
Right.
And so it was like this great combination of both, where there was this fella on the TV who was making fun of two things my father thought were laughable simultaneously. And yet it was still, yeah, it was still really good natured. But it was also, it was pointed in a sort of a gently satirical way.
Yeah, one of the most memorable episodes of Flip Wilson, the Flip Wilson show, well, involving Geraldine, was when Jonathan Winters came on with his cross-dressing character.
Whose name I can never remember. We had this
Granny something, wasn't it?
Nisbet or something. But basically, it was Jonathan Winters' character as a passenger on a plane and Geraldine coming on as the stewardess. And it was actually a moment where Jonathan Winters kind of met his match in that capacity, and it was like that kind of jaw-droppingly hilarious. So from that point on, it was like, okay, this guy has got something magical. And so everybody wanted to be a part of it. But he also stayed true to African-American entertainers. He had the Jackson 5
right
on there, which was huge. Pretty much anybody who was anybody desperately wanted to be a part of the Flip Wilson show, even though it was only on for about 4 years. And it had like 11 Grammy nominations, Golden Globe nominations out the yin yang.
I didn't know. Now, see, I didn't know the thing about him retiring from the show at a certain point because of...
Was
this his family, you said, or was it...
Yeah, he was married twice. I think the first marriage lasted about 10 years. And then the second wife that he had started to have some children. And so he just kind of stepped back a little bit to sort of raise his children full time. I think the last real big push he did was back in the mid-80s. He had a couple of bit parts here and there and just kind of like pulled it back. He had made his mark, I feel. And really, I think, did the honorable thing, which is he didn't want to become kind of a caricature
right
of himself, even though the Geraldine character was almost something along those lines, even though it was a character that he created.
Well, it's like Dana Carvey said that his biggest fear was becoming the guy who 30 years later was sitting at a booth at the state fair going, isn't that special?
Yeah.
You know, and it's like you just don't want to do that.
So, yeah, he, Flip, I think, found the perfect time to sort of pull back, to still maintain the fact that he was a positive role model, not just for African Americans, but just for people as a whole, and to sort of focus on the family at that point on. before he became ill and died of, I believe it was liver cancer that eventually took his life.
In some ways, and it's not like I know a tremendous amount of his career, but I do know that he had his own production company. He co-owned his own production company, which he was, in some ways, he was the television equivalent of Sam Cooke, because Sam Cooke was, if not the first prominent black performer to have his own publishing, to own his own masters, to not only write his own material as opposed to just having a studio full of guys who just churned out and told him what he was going to sing. Sam Cooke wrote all his own stuff, he owned his own stuff, and he produced his own records. Yeah. And he, you know, his whole thing was like, I just don't want to be the guy behind the microphone. I want to be the guy who owns everything that's going on, and I'm going to have a piece of all the action. And Flip Wilson did the same thing. And so as a result, you know, specifically with black entertainers, I think it's what Sammy Davis Jr. said one time. He said, I may get dirt on my uniform, but I'm rounding the bases, and the guy who is up after me will have it easier. And that's, you know, and Flip Wilson very much paved the way, you know, for a lot of that. And I respect guys also who just steps away from it. Yeah. Anybody who knows when to say, like, that's it, like, I'm out, and to retire or to move on to some different phase in their life. That is a thing that very few people know how to do correctly, and I admire anybody that does that at the right time.
Absolutely. To sort of get what to make your mark and to not allow that mark to suddenly become besmirched, I think, maybe a little bit by the fact that you stayed in the game a little bit too long. You hit, you know, some could say that music equivalent would be like Jimi Hendrix, even though his death kind of took him out of the game. It's a good thing because you don't want to see him trying to sell like 10, 220 commercials 100, you know, 20 years down the road, or trying to do like freecreditreport.com jingles. You know, you don't want to have them end up like that because it so totally takes away from their groundbreaking impact that they had. So
somebody sent me an email. They said it just says four words. It says Uptown Saturday Night. Word. which is a movie that I haven't thought about for years and years and years. Which I think I remember. Is it possible that I saw that on television?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, you could have seen it on television.
I remember almost nothing about it. I just remember watching that when I was a kid, so it must have been on TV at some point. But again, you know, the idea that that he got to a point where he felt like he had made his mark, and I think we talked about this last week with Drew Carey, the guys who just get to a certain point and they realize that either they no longer like the thing that they are doing, they don't enjoy it anymore, or that it was the rung on the ladder that they stepped onto because it was the one that was, you know, if we've talked about this before, the stand-up comedy is in some ways the first rung on the ladder for a lot of entertainers, because you just need a mic and a stage.
Yeah.
You don't have to have a studio. You don't have to have a camera. You don't have to have a production deal. You don't have to have a record label. You know, you can just get on stage somewhere, and if you're funny, that leads to the next thing, to the next thing, to the next thing. It leads to the TV show, and then at a certain point, he just said, I've kind of got, you know, I've got the money, I've got the fame, I've made the mark. I can come back if I want to.
Yeah, that's what kind of makes him like a comedian's comedian, is the fact that that wasn't his goal to start off with. Is like, I'm going to be this groundbreaking entertainer, have my own show that, you know, sets all kinds of standards. He just did what he loved to do and did it better than, you know, anybody else, regardless of race. And then once that was established, he was like, oh, okay, well then sweet, then I can step away from this now and focus on, you know, the reason why you try to get paid doing what you love the most, which is so you can take care of your family and not just sort of have them become a cursory aspect to your life and be like, well, you have to come along with this. My all this hard work that I'm doing is paying for all the things that you're enjoying. You're kind of letting your job work you, as opposed to the other way around, and then sort of just relying on historians write the history. I've done my job and I'm out. I'm just going to sort of focus on, you know, what's important to me now.
I've got two emails. One says, double word, cotton comes to Harlem, bam. And then this says, now I didn't, and I don't know if this is true or not, somebody says that, we were talking about the phrase, the devil made me do it. Somebody says, did you know that the phrase WYSIWYG, which is a computer term, which is what you see is what you get, it was coined because researchers named it after Flip Wilson's, at the catchphrase from Flip Wilson show, which I didn't know. I don't know if that's true or not.
It is.
But so apparently at Xerox PARC, they coined WYSIWYG for Flip Wilson. So that's
nice.
Pretty great. Awesome.
Yeah, I would suggest if you're looking to find some early comedy albums of Flip's to take a listen to, I would suggest Cowboys and Colored People is a fantastic album. The whole sequence where he's talking about Christopher Columbus coming and discovering America is just, it's timeless, I feel. It's one of those bits that just sort of fits.
We have a little bit of audio racked up here. I have, You sent me these two. I have the Ugly Baby and I have Columbus.
Oh, the Ugly Baby.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. All right. Hold on a second. Let me just, ladies and gentlemen, I give you Flip Wilson.
I was coming in from Baltimore to do the show. And, well, I was on the train there. And I'm settling my seat. I'm very relaxed, very relaxed. And the first thought that passed through my mind was to familiarize myself with the surroundings. And I glance across the aisle, and I notice that the lady occupying the seat there had her baby with her. Ugly baby. Bad-looking baby. Now, generally, I'd hesitate about passing an opinion about somebody's kid, but this was, even if I don't say it, it's an ugly baby. I only took one quick look, like that. In from the front of the coach comes this guy. The guy's, he's had a few. And as he approached the section where the woman was with the baby, he stops and he's staring, like that. And the woman's watching him. She's watching him from the corner of her eye. She says to him, "What are you looking at?" The guy says, "I'm looking at that ugly baby." "That's a bad-looking baby, lady." "I bet you save a lot of money with that baby." "Well, you don't have to hire any babysitter. Nobody's going to bother that kid." The lady gets offended. She gets offended. Does that make sense? As he pulls the emergency cord, the train stopped. There's a big scene in there. All of everybody's crowding around there. And you know the guy who goes through the train selling those 25-cent sandwiches for $1.50? He comes in. Big scene. The conductor comes in. The conductor says, "What's going on here? What's going on here?" And the lady said, "This fellow just insulted me. And I don't have to spend my money to ride this railroad and be insulted." The conductor said, "Now calm down, lady." He said, "Madam, the Pennsylvania Railroad will go to any length to avoid having differences between the passengers." He said, "Perhaps it would be more to your convenience if we were to rearrange your seating. And as a small compensation from the railroad, if you'll accompany me to the dining car, we'll give you a free meal. Maybe we'll find a banana for your monkey."
The thing that I notice about this delivery, too, is that it's obviously, you know, it's a story that you rehearse and you practice it, and you know, and you take it from venue to venue and do it from place to place, but it doesn't sound rehearsed.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound polished. It sounds like a story. He's even got a little bit of the, you know, the Carlin thing going on. I've talked about Carlin would actually script his pauses and almost his double takes and his stammers. I don't know if Flip Wilson's doing that or not, but it does sound like he's telling. It sounds like he's telling you the story for the first time. Like it's a thing that just happened to him on the way to the club that night.
Yeah.
And you know, before I go on stage, I got to tell you, or before, you know, we start, I got to tell you about this thing that happened to me on the train. And that's the way it sounds. And that's the way the best comedy should sound. Like a guy just talking to you and telling you a thing that just occurred to him.
Absolutely.
This has been Humor Me Comedy 101 with Mr. Big Jim Willig. Find him at facebook.com/JWillig1.
Number one. J Willig.
But is there a dot in there?
No, there's not. I thought there was, but there's
okay,
there's
J. That. Willig, numeral one.
Yes.
There you go. That's Willig, W-I-L-L-I-G, J. Willig, numeral one.
The reason I keep it so elusive is I don't want any people sending me pictures of spider clowns or, you know.
Spider clown, spider clown.
You don't even want to hear this. I just got the worst, never mind. I just got the worst thing about spider clowns in the email. You don't want to know. Yeah. I'll tell you later. We got to wrap this up here in just a moment. Make way for funemploymentradio.com. They're going to be in, and the show will be posted around 6 p.m. Pacific time later on today. It is Friday. That means it's time for clue number 5 for the EH Vending Name That Snack Contest. Don't forget, if you are the business owner, you're the manager, you're the guy who calls the shots at your place, your joint, your venue, your establishment, your outpost on the edge of space. If you find that your employees are just, if they're grumpy, if they're unlikable, they're irritable, they don't work, they, you know, they just, all they do is they sit around and they just ferment discord. You find that your place
bastards.
Is just... Bastards! That's what I'm saying. Filled with strife and dissonance. Look, get him a vending machine or else you're going to have to bring down the hobnailed boot of police suppression later on. Just, I mean, look, it's either Twizzlers now or the fire hose later. There's only two ways to deal with employees that they just start causing a ruckus.
And if you don't get them, like, good snacks, there might be a corpse parade.
That's what I'm saying. So, you know, if you want to contact EH Vending, you can do that via ehvending.com. That is ehvending.com. Josh is the owner. You can contact him at 360-816-1853 or James, the sales manager, 503-897-8255. 504-803-897-8204 or 360-816-1853. Everything from the traditional snack and soda machines to the office supply to you know, whatever it is you might need, and they can deal with any size business. If you're one outlet or 10 outlets, they'll find a price that works for you. EHVending.com, and of course, they're longtime listeners as well, so you're dealing with extended members of the Rick Emerson family. Please do tell them you heard it here, and you give them a call right now. I do mean right now. This instant. At 360-816-1853. It is time for the final clue for this week's Name That Snack contest. If you are the first person to correctly identify the snack about which we have been speaking, and you do so via snack at rickemerson.com, S-N-A-C-K, snack at rickemerson.com, you win yourself one of the bulging bags of consumable goodness in the corner of the studio from E.H. Vending. Today's clue, the final clue, it has... I gotta show Jim what it is. Now, the audience, please... Please do not reveal the clue to the audience. Today's clue, it has something in common with today's studio guest. There you go. That is clue the fifth. Today's clue has something in common with our in-studio guest. Right. On that note,
it's filled with monosodium glutamate.
Penis rinds?
Hates children. we want to thank our guests, including Mr. Big Jim Willig. You can find him online, facebook.com/jwillig1. Join us on Monday when our guests will include Mr. Ryan White from The Oregonian, and Tuesday, talking to Joel Carter from the FX series Justified. Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon, at the news desk, Don Taylor. Advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill. Executive producer Bruce Agle. Chief of staff is Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show made possible by a generous grant from y'all. So we thank you for listening. Please do spread the word. And we will see you on Monday. Thank you for listening. It is Friday, February 4th, 2011. Have a safe weekend. And thank you for listening. Bye now.